It's time for the Scott Rintoul Show.
He holds, he shoots, he scores!
Where the West...
Pettersson off the left wing, steps into a slot shot and scores. Elias Pettersson, oh my word, again.
Is one.
Rebound, Kachuk scores! What a night for Matthew Kachuk.
Let's make it happen. Everything you got, no excuses.
Jackson avoids, spins, he's in. Touchdown, McCaffrey leaps.
Now, here's Scott Rintoul.
Pull my trigger, let me blow your mind.
What's going on? How's your Thursday? Hope it's shaping up well. We're going to make it better. That's what we do. It's our pledge to you every single day with the Scott Rintoul Show. Hope you will join us for the process, not only as a listener, but maybe as someone who interacts with the program as well. You've got the text numbers, most likely. We'll give them out during the course of this first segment as well, because many of you are keen to earn some Upper Deck cards, or at least try to. We're giving away cards all this week. The Upper Deck Ingrained Series, we have more clues for you today, another contest, and by the end of the first couple of hours of this program, we will determine winners in both the BC and Alberta markets. So stay tuned. We got that clue coming a little bit later on. We've got a tournament back up and running. We've seen a couple of games in the MLS as that team returns to play. So four teams have taken the pitch and another team has been eliminated. That's the latest news. It was expected. But yes, Nashville SC. First season. Debut. Expansion team. Hey, let's get going. Let's get people. Okay, actually, you're not going to be a part of this tournament right now. More on that as the morning continues. Won't be the major talking point here, but as we look forward to hockey, as we look forward to baseball and basketball, all of these leagues are important to the process because things they screw up or things they do well along the way, that is pertinent information that you can add to your data, to your process, so that you can amend things so you don't find yourself in the same mess that some of these teams have. We'll see if the rest of the tournament goes according to plan. The math works a lot better now for the MLS. Hey, they've got 24 teams, six pools of four, as opposed to 26 teams with five pools of four and one pool of six. The way they did the math was funky from the get-go. As I mentioned yesterday, I don't think this is how they wanted to get down to the good math to make all of the pools equitable in this tournament. And the World Cup-style MLS is back tourney. But I digress. More on that again as the morning continues and any breaking news from that sport, baseball, if there's more chaos in that, we will get it to you. Let's talk about the National Hockey League. And apparently we do have breaking news. Greg Ballack, who is operating this program, has just texted me that the Minnesota Wild have hired Judd Brackett. This is an interesting little twist. And if you haven't been following this story, then you are obviously not in the Vancouver Canucks market. You are not in the BC market, most likely. Judd Brackett has been the Canucks' head amateur scout for the last number of years. The Canucks, as many people in the hockey world know, have been credited with doing an excellent job of amateur scouting. Elias Pettersson, fifth overall in the draft. Quinn Hughes, yes, he fell down the board. The Canucks still took him where six other teams above them did not. And there are others along the way since Judd Brackett has been in charge of amateur scouting. Well, there was some sort of falling out in Vancouver, and they parted ways. Jim Benning, there were things within his regime he did not want to give up within the scouting. Jim Benning comes from a scouting background. There were things Judd Brackett wanted that Jim Benning quite plainly and publicly said, I'm not willing to give certain things up. He didn't specify what they were, but Judd Brackett felt as though he had earned his way up the ranks and earned the opportunity to have more of his vision imparted upon the scouting department. So they decided to part ways. The contract expired at the end of June, and it has not taken long for Judd Brackett to get another gig. He is with the Minnesota Wild, which is interesting because guess who Vancouver plays in the play-in round? Now, amateur scouting is not going to affect that. It will affect the draft, which I will get to in just a moment, and we'll see what type of impact he can have early. What is the appointment, Greg? What is Michael Russo appointing? Is he head of amateur scouting there? What appointment has he been given, or do we have a title yet?
Yes, he is the director of amateur scouting for the Minnesota Wild now. A little intriguing note going into this playoff matchup.
Yeah, it is. And again, it will not impact the playoff matchup. maybe there are some questions they will have for Judd Brackett about the team, one that he is very familiar with. But again, his department is amateur scouting. Bill Guerin continuing to put his stamp on that organization. And that play-in round will start at the end of this month or early next month. We'll wait and see. This was some of the news that came down in the National Hockey League yesterday. Again, the breaking news is that Judd Brackett has been hired by the Minnesota Wild. Generally, an amateur scout being hired, even if he's the director of amateur scouting, doesn't garner a ton of attention. But because of the way this situation went down, this will be a major talking point around Vancouver today. But as for the rest of the hockey world, we have a tentative NHL calendar. We've got the play-in, the playoffs, the off-season, which includes the draft, free agency, and then a November training camp with a potential December start to next season. So what stands out? Well, we kind of knew when this tournament was going to run. And whether it starts on July 30th, 31st, or August 1st, as many people anticipate it will, we kind of knew when that was going to happen, assuming everybody gets to Toronto and Edmonton healthy and that there aren't big outbreaks. We do have a final date. We do know when, if this tournament is able to proceed as they hope, that it is going to end. It will end no later than October 2nd. That is the last possible day for a Stanley Cup final playoff game. Maybe it ends at the end of September. Maybe it's early October. But then there's an October 6th draft. The question for me regarding the October 6th draft, it has nothing to do with the proximity to the end of the season. It's more, well, how does this work with CHL seasons, with what they're planning out right now? Are there potential draft picks who could be training with CHL clubs at that point in time? What about the top guys? What do they do? Are they trying to stay in shape? Do they not want to risk injury? That, to me, is somewhat interesting as we approach that October 6th date. October 9th is when free agency is expected to begin. There's no courting period this time around. I'm sure nobody will talk to any agents behind the scenes. That never happened before, and I'm sure it won't happen now. Of course it's going to happen. There's just no legal tampering period. So you better be careful about it if you're going to have those conversations. And maybe they are a friend of a friend talks to the agent, whatever it happens to be. We all know how the subterfuge in this industry works. Here's what is interesting to me. And yeah, I'm interested in that other stuff, but this is more interesting. November 17th training camp with a possible December 1st start. You know what that means? Very few preseason games. That's great news for NHL fans. I imagine that's great news for most NHL players who have for years lobbied to have the preseason shortened. And because of the compacted schedule that we are going to get, it's a necessity this year. Again, if this all plays out. But if we shorten the preseason, we have very few preseason games, what impact does that have on future years? Now it's because of necessity. But moving forward, how often have we all complained, oh man, another preseason, they're playing 8 preseason games this year? Give me something other than split squad hockey, please. We know that 95% of the roster spots are taken already because of contracts. We can all see that. People are more in tune with their own salary cap situations with the teams they follow than they ever have been before. So it's less about the competition that it used to be about back in the day. Ooh, who could make the team this year? You know who's going to be on the team. There are very few surprises. There are 1 or 2 on every roster. And yeah, there are surprises within the hierarchy. You might see a guy that you thought was going to be on the third line make his way to the second line. You might see somebody who isn't as flashy early on in the preseason as you had hoped and maybe starts in the press box. But you know who's going to be on the team. Do we ever go back? The other thing when you look at this calendar is the Stanley Cup finalists, for those who are worried, man, what about this shortened offseason? Well, the Stanley Cup finalists are going to get 2 months minimum between winning the Stanley Cup and getting back on the ice in December. Now, normally you get a little longer, but normally you've played for 8 months consecutively. These players have just had a long time off. I am hoping, I am knocking on wood, that this tournament does not lead to mass injuries, certainly to superstar players and people who put butts in seats for next season. I'm hoping that's the case. But even if you make it to the end, you're having a one-to-one work-to-rest recovery here. That is far better than NHL players normally get. And everybody else, other than those 2 Stanley Cup finalists, you're getting at least 2.5 months. You might have 3 months in the case of those 7 teams that aren't even involved in the play-ins or the playoffs, you're getting way too long. That's the complaint there. Hey, how can we get our guys on the ice? These guys are going to be off for 8 months. That's a little bit too long for our liking. So those are the critical dates that came out yesterday and the tentative ones that are in place. Your comments always welcome. 650, 650, or 960, 960. We get them. We will build them into the program as we see appropriate. I'm going to welcome Jamie Dodd into the conversation in just 1 minute. He is the producer of this show. He's lined up another great one today. Kelly Rudy joins us at the bottom of the hour. Brendan Morrison next hour. Lindy Ruff is the new head coach in New Jersey. He's the new old head coach in New Jersey. Less a shot about his age, more a shot about how long Lindy Ruff has been around the National Hockey League. And I'm not saying they hired the wrong guy. I'm not saying that for a second, but this is the conversation I want to get into. I don't have to tell you very much about Lindy Ruff. You all know him because you're hockey fans, and you remember him with the Sabres, and you remember him with the Stars, and he's been coaching with the Rangers the past number of seasons, taking care of the blue line there. Lindy Ruff is a very good coach. He is well-respected, but he doesn't move the needle for a lot of people in the hockey world, for certainly the casual hockey fan, but maybe even the hardcore. And that's not to say he's the wrong hire. I will repeat that numerous times during this segment. The Devils appear to have checked out a bunch of different candidates along the way. Gerard Gallant was up for this gig. We all know the success that he had with Vegas, and many were surprised to see him let go earlier this season. Peter Laviolette, he's taken three different teams to a Stanley Cup final. John Stevens, who was the longtime assistant in L.A. and has been the bridesmaid in many a competition for a head coaching gig, and has had an opportunity very briefly. Alan Nezradin was the guy who was taking care of things after John Hines got let go. They seriously considered him, but felt that maybe now is not the right time for him to be the head coach of the New Jersey Devils. Remember where this team is at. 2 years ago, fair to say they overachieved. This year, underachieved. They're probably somewhere in between. They're not fantastic. They've got some nice young pieces that a lot of people around the NHL like. Got to fix their goaltending department, just not getting enough saves on a consistent enough basis. How do they do that? Can they do that from within? Do they have to go get a UFA goaltender? We'll wait and see. But they've got some nice pieces, and it's fair to say that they underachieved in New Jersey. But when Lindy Ruff's name came out, it didn't excite a lot of hockey fans. It didn't excite a lot of people around the hockey world. And there's two sides to this. So one is this. Okay, we'd like to see some new blood. We would like to see someone else get an opportunity. This is not a sexy hire. It's not a curious decision. Ooh, let's see how this is going to go. But does that make it wrong? Dave Tippett gets hired last year as head coach of the Edmonton Oilers. Considered a retread. Well, we know what Dave Tippett is like. Well, we also know what the floor for Dave Tippett is like. And it's a big reason the Edmonton Oilers have had a turnaround this year. It's worked out really well for the Edmonton Oilers. Dave Tippett, you talk to people around hockey, he's a very good coach. Should he not be up for gigs because we've seen him behind a couple of other benches before? Should he not be hired because of that? That is the flip side of this argument. You want to see fresh blood. You want to see new faces. But should he not be hired because you've seen him before? Remember, this is a turn-and-burn culture in the National Hockey League. You do not last long behind most benches. Patience with coaches around the National Hockey League is extremely rare, even with the ones that we consider to be good or in some cases great. Alain Vigneault is the new coach in Philadelphia after being successful in New York, but eventually they decided to turn the page. He was very successful in Vancouver. Eventually they decided to turn the page. You last 5 or 6 years in a job in the National Hockey League, it feels like a lifetime because most guys are gone within a couple of seasons or within 3 seasons of getting their first opportunity or that next opportunity. So if that's the case, if you're running coaches through the turnstiles that quickly, well, it's going to be pretty hard to find someone who doesn't have NHL head coaching experience. You're going to run out of your pool pretty quickly. And should that eliminate a coach from consideration because he's been a head coach and he hasn't won a Stanley Cup? So let's go find someone else. Well, all of a sudden, the pool's going to run dry pretty quickly. I understand. I get the psychology, and I understand why fans don't love this type of hire. I get it. It doesn't excite them. One of the words I saw yesterday that was on social media when Lindy Ruff got hired was uninspired. Uninspired was the word. And from perception, that's fair. It doesn't feel inspired. It doesn't feel like, ooh, this coach is going to take this team in a new direction. What might this all be like? And again, it doesn't mean he's the wrong guy for the game. But let's unpack that. There's 31 coaches in the league right now. How many of those coaches, if you go through every single team right now, how many of those coaches would you consider inspiring? How many fan bases believe in the current coach of their team? You can hit me up, text me your thoughts. Who's on that list? I'll bring Jamie Dodd into the conversation right now. Jamie, I put together a short list of coaches that have been hired recently that currently have gigs that we would consider different or unique or in some cases inspiring. I came up with four. And that doesn't mean I only think there are four good coaches in the NHL. I don't think there are only four fan bases that believe in their head coach. But here are the unique or inspired coaches, if you will, that haven't really been there before. Jeremy Colliton in Chicago. That's unique. There's a guy who's very young. He's in his 30s. Nobody saw him on the head coaching radar right now. That is a very unique hire. Ralph Kruger is a unique hire because we just don't see European coaches get head coaching gigs. That's something I would like to see change. I think they need to, in the National Hockey League, be more expansive of their interview process and bring in coaches from around the planet. But Ralph Kruger is on that list. David Quinn brought in a guy from college hockey, a guy that NHL fans might not necessarily know. It's worked out well for the New York Rangers. Sheldon Keefe would be the other guy on that list, went the more traditional route, worked his way through junior, but he's younger. He is seen as unique or creative or inspiring. Do you have any outside that list, Jamie?
No, that seems about right. And I think it's telling that, you know, even including someone like Jeremy Colliton or Sheldon Keefe, I think you're right that it is in the context of an NHL coaching, the NHL coaching fraternity, it is unique. But it's when you're talking about, oh, is that such an inspired choice? It's not that far out of the realm, but the normal lines for, you know, where people look for NHL coaches is so narrow that those guys do qualify as somewhat out of the box.
So is it narrow by choice? Is it narrow by necessity? Here's the hard part of this conversation, I think, Jamie, to come to grips with. Not every situation is fit for every coach. Peter Laviolette is a very good example of this to me. Whether it's fair or not, here's the reputation with Peter Laviolette. If you have your team to a certain level, one that is maybe getting close to being in the playoffs, or one that gets to the playoffs but doesn't get over, Peter Laviolette is a guy who can take you to the next level. He's not seen as a guy that's going to take over a very young team and grow with it over the course of 4 to 6 years, but that they're willing to miss the playoffs for a couple of years. Maybe Peter Laviolette would be great in those situations, but the label attached to him is more of a finisher. And so if you have a team in that situation, Peter Laviolette looks like a very good candidate for you, but in other situations, you might not consider him. And I think guys suffer the opposite as well. Hey, we'd like this coach for a young team. So part of this has to do in the narrowing of the field. Where do you find your team right now? What type of coach do you need moving forward? Is that the mindset overall that needs to change?
I don't know if that mindset needs to change. I think there is some truth to that. You know, if you want a coach who's perceived as really good at development, that's fine if you have a young team. I don't think that's a problem. You know, we were talking before the show and I said, it's really hard. This debate is really tricky because I think in general, the idea that NHL teams are too conservative with their hiring practices, and not just in the head coaching ranks, but also in the executive ranks, I think you could make the case for too. Yeah, I agree with that. They should be more creative. They should look outside the box. The problem is in any specific case, it's impossible to know beforehand. And with Lindy Ruff, it's not like he has a terrible track record as a head coach in the NHL. He's won a lot of games. He's taken teams deep in the playoffs. He can coach at the NHL level. So it's hard to look at this one specifically and say, oh, what are they thinking? Lindy Ruff, he's a retread. That's wild. Yes, teams should be more creative, but that doesn't mean that this situation won't work out well for Lindy Ruff.
Exactly. And we can have this conversation throughout the course of the morning. I will give you two areas right now that I would like to see included more, that I would like to see the coaching hires come from. I gave you one already. You heard me say it a minute ago. European coaches, I think there needs to be a greater influx there. Here is the second pool, and we can discuss it throughout the morning. Recently retired players. We have seen this trend in other sports. It does not happen as often in hockey. Every once in a while it does. Generally, it's quickly to an assistant. But could that work in the National Hockey League with guys who have recently been there? And how many guys, given the money they make right now, want to commit themselves to that lifestyle right away after their playing career? That is a concept we can talk about throughout the course of the morning, and one we can talk about with our next guest as well. Before this end of the before the end of the segment, I promised you this, so I will do it right now. The Upper Deck and Grain Series giveaway, we're doing it every single day this week. We're giving away a couple of boxes of Upper Deck and Grain hockey cards, one in the Alberta market, one in the BC market. Here's how you win. Throughout the show, including right now, I will give you clues to the mystery card of the day. I will also give you a bonus visual clue. If you are following me on Twitter, at Scott Rintoul is my Twitter handle. I will give you a bonus visual clue there. When you hear the clue, you text your guest to either 650-650 in BC or 960-960 in Alberta. So here's your first clue of the day in the Upper Deck and Grain Series giveaway. This is going to be tough, but it'll make sense as the clues continue. This player has played for five different NHL franchises, but he's currently playing for the one that drafted him. So work your way through that. He's played for five different NHL franchises, but right now he is playing with the one that drafted him. It's a bit of a riddle off the top. It'll make sense as the other clues pour in. And as mentioned, if you're not following me on Twitter, at Scott Rintoul, and you want to win this contest, you better get on board. I will release that clue in the second hour of the program. We will get you your oh yeah moment of the day as we get you tuned up for this NHL tourney. And we will ask Kelly Rudy, does the hiring process in the NHL need to be more expansive? Find out next right here on the Scott Rintoul Show.
Scott Rintoul Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Oh, yeah. Cody Eakin plays for the Jets now. That's right. It's your oh, yeah moment of the day. You might remember Cody Eakin from last year's playoffs. It's a series you won't soon forget. And oh, yeah, Cody Eakin was right at the heart of that matter. Cody Eakin is the guy who got tossed undeservingly from that Game 7 matchup between Vegas and San Jose. He was the guy who allegedly bludgeoned Joe Pavelski. And he's the guy who got sent off in a very controversial 5-minute major in a game call that turned into a power play. And, hey, man, yeah, you got to kill a little bit of that penalty. Maybe just don't give up four goals, as the Sharks memorably score four on that five-minute man advantage on the power play, and they somehow rescue a series that looked over. But, oh, yeah, that was Cody Eakin. Now, that had nothing to do with Vegas sending Eakin to Winnipeg at the deadline, but either way, he is there now, and he makes the Jets more difficult to deal with in the playoffs. I think we could all agree on that. He's not a first-line center, but he is a strong two-way center. He's a great penalty killer. He does all of those things that don't show up in the box score, and he brings experience of a run to the Cup final to the Jets roster. He's only a couple years removed from scoring 22 goals. He picked up 5 points in the 8 games that he appeared in for Winnipeg after being acquired. He will obviously be a part of the series against the Calgary Flames in the first round. Cody Eakin now playing for his hometown team. He is your, oh yeah, moment of the day as we get you back up to speed after this pause on what rosters look like and those little tweaks that may have happened or injuries that have now healed and players that will be in the lineup that perhaps you'd forgotten about. Winnipeg, by the way, also added Dylan DeMello to their blue line at the deadline, so we can include that in the oh yeah moment of the day. Kelly Rudy set to join us here momentarily. There was a lot of news that came down yesterday as well with the National Hockey League and the calendar, the tentative one of critical dates that got pushed forward and the insiders in the game put those dates. So we'll talk to Kelly a little bit about that. I also want his thoughts on the hiring process right now in the National Hockey League. Does it need to be more expansive? Is it fair to label the guys the way we do in the National Hockey League? Love your feedback on that as well. You look at the way the numbers work. If you go through all 31 teams in the NHL right now, 13 of those coaches are on their first NHL gig. 13 of 31. Guys like Travis Green, guys like David Quinn or Jeremy Colleton, Sheldon Keefe. There's lots of names on the list. Guys like Jeff Ward. Now, two of the names on the list, Jeff Ward and the other one being Dean Evason, they are in their first head coaching gig, but they are there with the interim tag. Now, that can be shed if things go extremely well. It wasn't his first gig last year, but Craig Berube was the head coach and, in fact, was still the interim head coach somehow when St. Louis won the Stanley Cup. And then after that, they removed the tag. And when Craig Berube got the job and he just ascended into that position because they decided to make a change in St. Louis, nobody thought too much about it. Nobody thought, oh boy, this is an inspired choice. They went, okay, that's next man up. And that's often the way it works in interim situations. Here you go. You've got the gig. Bob Bugner in San Jose is an example of this as well. And this isn't to say that these people can't do the job. But again, one of the words I saw thrown around yesterday when Lindy Ruff, when that news broke, was, this is uninspired. This is a retread. Why don't they try something new? Doesn't mean the Devils have made the wrong hire here, and Dave Tippett in Edmonton is a very good example of that. Kelly Rudy knows a lot more about this than I do, as he does with many things in hockey. My pleasure to welcome him back to the program. He of Hockey Night in Canada, Sportsnet, and of course a former National Hockey League goaltender. Kelly, how are you today, my friend? I hope you and yours are safe and healthy.
Well, thanks, Scott, and same to you. I'm doing really well, thanks. In fact, it's going to be a great day, although I'm battling some allergies. You can tell from my voice that whatever's going on, even though I take a pill every day here, but Calgary season, the allergy season here this year is not very good. But the good news is, Scott, I'm heading to the golf course. I'm going to play a little golf with some of your friends. So two excellent play-by-play people, Rick Ball, a good friend of yours, and Derek Wills, the play-by-play voice of the Calgary Flames here on this very station, and Eric Francis. So we're going to have a lot of great hockey talk today on the course, and I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a nice day here in the foothills of the mountains.
Beautiful. Sounds like a great day, and I'm glad it's setting up well for all of you. Kelly, you're an optimistic person by nature. How optimistic are you about the plan you've seen set forth by the National Hockey League about getting this tournament up and running?
Very optimistic. I wouldn't say that, you know, I think it's going to go off perfectly. But I think for me, this is about as smooth as it can go. The dates really fit in well. It's going to be a real challenge for the players. There's no question if in fact, that the last day is October 2nd and then fire back up within a month. And you know, it's not ideal for the players, but under the circumstances, I think this is the best the National Hockey League can do. You know, I look at the start dates, and unfortunately, Scott, for me, it's not going to work quite all that great because, unfortunately, with the pandemic, our youngest daughter was going to get married in September in Canmore at a beautiful place, and that's not going to happen now. So she's going to have a backyard wedding August 1st at our place, and so I'm going to miss that first weekend, which is going to be a real bummer to a certain degree, but we all have to adjust in our own certain way, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Priorities are a big thing. Hey, I think we're going to see at least a couple players opt out of this tournament, and they have to make choices in their lives. I don't think it's going to be as widespread in hockey as it is in other leagues. Do you agree with that sentiment?
I don't know. I've been thinking about this the last few days. My feeling is, and I hope I'm wrong, but understandably, if a person opts out, I wouldn't question their integrity or anything related to that. I wonder what happens if they fire this thing back up and there are a few cases and people start to get worried or scared or anxious. And I think you know my feelings about mental health. I've been a big advocate for a long, long time. And if it plays with somebody, if it scares somebody, if it makes them uncomfortable, I don't see any reason why they can't opt out for their own safety, for their own mental health. And I'm curious to see if that ramps up a little bit once the play begins again and people get a little bit fearful. You're in your group, you're in your bubble, and all of a sudden you start hearing a couple stories and nobody will know if people are opting out because of injury and or mental health issues or whatever their fears might be. And maybe if you start to see, I don't know, 2-3 guys on a team not in the lineup, does that, I don't know, add to your anxiety personally? And I am a little bit curious to see how this is going to play out over the next few months.
I am curious as well. I just tend to think, Kelly, in this particular sport, the way players view their importance to their team and their commitment to their team, whether it's the right thing to do or not, I don't think we're going to see it as widespread. And I'm with you. If anybody opts out, this isn't conscription. You don't have to be there. If you want to opt out, that's your own personal decision. And I do think players will support that. I think they might be disappointed. But, hey, we see this with contract holdouts. So, to me, Kelly, why would this be any different? If somebody has to take care of their personal business and they make it clear to their teammates that as much as I want to be there, I've got other things in my life that are more important, I think that will be supported by players, don't you?
Oh, 100%. It's a changing world, Scott. Like, we had an interesting conference call. I think I can share this, and I'm comfortable doing so, with Sportsnet last year, last week, our employer. So moving forward, you know, in our industry, whether it's hockey broadcasting or playing hockey, it was always a badge of honor to go to work, even if you're under the weather, right? Like, you just struggled through. I think this year was my first year ever in which I missed a game because I was sick. And, of course, I've been sick before, but I always went to work. And we are no longer allowed to do that at Sportsnet. So no matter if you're feeling a little bit under the weather, you cannot go to work. And I think that's a great thing. And so that's my point about the players. You know, once again, it was always a badge of honor. Okay, this guy's in the lineup even though he's battling a bit of the flu. And oh, boy, how brave. And, you know, you love to see the honoring his teammates and the honoring the game. Well, that's no longer going to be the case. And so whether it's physical illness or mental illness, this is a different changing world, and all of us have to adapt to that, and it's a good thing.
I agree with what you just said, and we're lockstep there. Kelly Rudy joining me this morning on the Scott Rintoul Show, and I am much like you, Kelly. I viewed it over the course of my career, and I've openly shared that on this program, that for most of my career, I viewed it as being selfish if I didn't go into work, if I had what I considered a cold or the sniffles or a sore throat, and I needed to flip my thinking 180 degrees and realize that I've been selfish in those situations by potentially going into the office and infecting others. And I know there is a line to be struck. It's one thing that does cause me a little bit of concern in this tournament. We get down to a game 5 of a play-in series. We get down to a game 7 of a playoff series. And somebody has what they think might be a symptom or two. Hey, I know there's going to be temperature checks. I know there's going to be testing every single day. But it does take a while for results to come back, and I'm not sure that every single player is going to say, maybe I should sit this one out in those situations.
Absolutely. And that's why I'm curious about what's going to happen in the next few months, and that's why I had the conversation just a minute ago about how does that affect a person's mental health. So you see a teammate, he's got the sniffles, you know, he's passed the test today, but, you know, what happens if he comes back positive in a couple of days and how that's going to affect everybody. I'm at a loss for words because I just don't know how it's going to play out exactly. I'm really excited that we're back at work in a couple weeks, but man, it's just, there's so many unknowns for everybody involved, from Gary Bettman to every trainer on the teams. And so I'm going to be watching this whole thing not only from a hockey perspective but a life and health perspective as well.
Let's turn our attention to the Lindy Ruff hire in New Jersey. And I've repeated this time and time again. None of this is to say they got the wrong guy for the job. I think there's some that weren't thrilled with the Dave Tippett hire. That's worked out wonderfully in the first year for the Edmonton Oilers. Lindy Ruff might be extremely successful with the New Jersey Devils. That being said, is the hiring process overall in the NHL expansive enough in its scope?
I hesitate because it's a great question, and I struggle with that a little bit too. Like, do you want and for lack of a better term, younger and more progressive people in the game. But having said that, there's no reason why a person, say, my age can't adapt to what's happening in the game. And you look at some of the other people that are my age that, you know, a guy like Alain Vigneault. Now, I think all of us would agree that he's a fantastic coach, and there's no reason to overlook a guy like that simply because of age, because he adapts to the game. He understands everything that's happening in the game now. I think Claude Julien is an example of that. When he first went to Montreal, I didn't like the style that he was playing, and then all of a sudden he figured out, you know what, this game is entirely different than what it was 3 years ago, and so he made all the changes to adapt to play a quicker, faster game and get the defense moving the puck up quicker and joining the rush or leading the rush. And so I think to a certain degree, it's just about what kind of team you have as a general manager, what your players might need in terms of being pushed or motivated or challenged or helped along the way. And so I look at it with a completely open lens. So I don't really look at age as much as I look at how they're willing to adapt, their philosophy on personal health and so on. I mean, it goes back to the conversation we've been having this entire call. Mental health is such an important thing now. When you look at the Canadian Mental Health Association, will tell you 1 in 5 Canadians suffer. And by suffering, in my term of the or definition of the term, it's they are greatly affected by something going on. And so if you look around the dressing room and there's 23 players, simple math tells you that, you know, a number of my players are affected greatly. So I have to treat them differently, and I have to make sure that I'm on top of everything they're doing every day, and I have a personal discussion with them so they're okay as well. I know that's a long-winded answer and very convoluted, but it's a complex world now.
You're right. And at the top of your priority list, in my opinion, when it comes to hiring somebody of a leader in leadership, whether it's in hockey or somewhere else, communicator. You have to be a great communicator. As a former player, what does that look like to you?
Like an entirely different world? How's that? there is no communication. As much as I love Al Arbour and Barry Melrose and a lot of the other coaches I had, basically what they said was I just nodded my head and went about my business. And there was very little conversation about, hey, how are you doing today? What do you think we need to do better on the penalty kill? And, you know, it's a different thing, you know. From what I gather now, you can have a very frank conversation with the players today, but they're going to come back at you with a number of different questions, and they want answers. And they'll accept the answers, but they're going to have plenty of questions. And that's another really good thing that's happening in today's game, that there's some real honest conversation and moving the game forward. So I like it. It's you know, very much like this conversation you and I are having. We're two sports broadcasters, and 10, 15, 20 years ago, we wouldn't have been talking about mental health and what's going on and how you have to treat people and what's right or wrong. And they're looking for answers. And, you know, it's such a great thing, but it's different, right? You know, I love it, but I don't know if it's for everybody that, you know, if they're not progressive enough to think that way.
Well, and there's two areas that I would like to see expanded. One I think will work for sure if more people and more teams are willing to give it a chance. The other I'm curious about. So let's start with the first. More European coaches. The more you talk about European leagues and the way that they've progressed, and look, there are some countries that are doing things better than we are doing in Canada or in the United States in certain aspects of the game. I'd like to see a higher influx of European coaches, Kelly, because it seems to me that in many of these countries, a different atmosphere around the team has been created than perhaps we are used to in North America.
Absolutely, and they have a different skill set, and they allow players of different skills to do or play the game differently. And I've always admired the skill level of the players from Europe for different reasons, and some of the skill sets that they bring over and we've added to our North American style game. And even then you look at like the States, I think they were a country in general terms I'm speaking, but they taught skating in a different way and in a better way for a while. And then because Canadians, we skated always well, but we were a rugged style, and that was really something that was our forte. But you look around the world and certain countries, like the players that come over from Russia, they have this cool skill set where they can really stick handle with the puck in tight to their toes. And you think a lot of guys, like it's not only guys like Panarin that we admire today, but early on when they first started coming over. And you look at other guys that, you know, the Finns, they come over and they play more of a Canadian game, but they have a unique skill set. So I'm with you. We need players from around the world, and we can add as Canadians some of those skills to our game.
So here's the second one, and we've seen this trend in baseball, and we've seen it in basketball to a certain degree. Players who have recently been in the league are getting managerial jobs or head coaching jobs quicker than they ever have before, and part of the reason is that they relate to players well. Would that work in hockey?
Yes, of course, and for all the reasons we've been talking about this entire conversation, that I just think, you know, I look around and I travel around, and I see some of the guys that played recently and they're now in management, and they're talking to everybody. Like, the communication level is unbelievable, and that's their real skill set. You go in a dressing room after a practice or the morning skate, and there are people talk. There's so many different conversations going on. And for those reasons, I think that if you just recently played, you can jump into management really quickly. And there's a respect level there also.
Well, excellent communication. That's why we bring you on, sir, and it's why we all enjoy watching you on the television as well. Have a great round today. Maybe line your pocket with a little something from each of those three guys you are playing with, and I look forward to hearing a successful story the next time we talk.
Okay. Thanks, Scott. Have a great day, buddy.
You too. That is Kelly Rudy of Hockey Night in Canada, Sportsnet color analyst as well, and, of course, a former National Hockey League goaltender. Look, communication's at the heart of this, and we've talked about this on this program before, and I think that's pretty simple for most people to see. You have to be able to communicate effectively with your players, and you have to be adaptable enough to read your players. People management is at the heart of this. It's less X's and O's. Yeah, there's a component of that, and some coaches are stronger in that than others, but how do you motivate the bulk of your team? There's always going to be a couple players on the roster that don't like the head coach because they feel they deserve more playing time, or they should be on the power play first unit when they're on the second, or maybe they're not included on a special team they want to be. So not every coach is going to please everybody, but can you get the most out of most of your players? Can you have effective communication tools? And that's why former players, let's see if they get head coaching gigs sooner, if that's something they want. Can they intern, if you will, for a couple of seasons? We see that happen all the time. Hey, you just played? We can make you assistant coach pretty fast. How quickly can that fast track into a head coaching position? It doesn't always work. We've seen some cases, like guys like Adam Oates had a job and didn't work out as well as many people had hoped it was going to. Doug Waite had a job, didn't work out as well as people had hoped. So do they get another opportunity? Part of the conversation we're having here is, well, what classifies as a retread, and do you want one, and should those people be excluded from the conversation when it comes to hiring an NHL bench boss? It's a good one. Get in on it, 650, 650, 960, 960. We're seeing texts come in. I will tell you there are some correct ones already, but you can qualify as well for our Upper Deck and Grain Series giveaway. We're giving away a couple of boxes every single day. I'm going to give you the next clue right now. Just because you're not first doesn't mean you're not going to win. You do have to have the correct answer to qualify, but here's another way that you can be closer to that opportunity, our second clue. So this player has not only played for five different NHL franchises, but is currently playing with the one that drafted him. Here's another clue, and this will narrow the field. He was selected by Vegas in the expansion draft. He was selected by Vegas in the expansion draft. That is your second clue. If you believe you have the right answer, text it into 650, 650, or 960, 960 right now. And by the end of the next hour, we will announce our winners for you this morning. Well, coming up next, there was a lot of pressure for him to say something for one reason. And yesterday he did. We will tell you what he said next and whether or not that complicates the situation. I thought it was a brilliant statement, and I'll tell you who it is and what he said next right here on the Scott Rintoul Show.
The Scott Rintoul Show is sponsored by Volvo. Visit your Lower Mainland retailer or volvocars.ca. Welcome to the Scott Rintoul Show.
A lot of right answers streaming in. Good. I'm glad you're getting it. I want lots of qualifiers. I want many of you to be eligible to win the Upper Deck and Grain Series hockey card giveaway every single day. Many of you are getting it. For those who haven't, fret not. I have another clue coming your way, and hopefully this cements it for you. Hopefully this cements who this player is. Again, I got the ingrained hockey card series box this week. I opened my pack. This was one of the cards that was in it. I will tweet out a bonus clue as well, so you have a visual to go with it. Just a little clue. Again, if you're wavering or waffling between a couple of players, maybe this will help cement things for you. You can text in your correct answers to 650, 650 or 960, 960, and we have a number of them coming in throughout the course of the morning. You can also comment on any of the topics that we've got going on right now. You can comment on any of them right now. And we're going to get into a couple here in just one second. There are a lot of people in Vancouver and Canucks fans, I guess, from wherever they happen to be, commenting on the Minnesota Wild hiring Judd Brackett. I'll get into that more next hour, but just a quick comment here. A couple of things can be true, and in this case, they are. This can be an excellent hire for the Minnesota Wild and have absolutely nothing to do with the Wild and Canucks play-in series. Like, the way some people are reacting, you would think that Judd Brackett is going to be on the power play or starting in goal for the Minnesota Wild. This is a very good hire for Minnesota. I think he's excellent at his job. Excellent. And we'll debate for years in Vancouver and those in Canuck Nation whether or not the Canucks did the right thing, and a lot of that will depend on the drafting track record going forward in Vancouver and what happens with the Minnesota Wild as well. And there is one particular circumstance that is more interesting to me than any other with regards to this hire, and I will get into that next hour. But both of those things can be true. This can be a good hire and have nothing to do with this playoff series. And in this fact, or in this case, I should say, they are. There was a lot of pressure on one high-profile athlete to make a statement yesterday, the day before, over the course of this week, and he did. He made it yesterday, and he does not actually play the sport that he was asked to make a statement on. It's not something he was involved with professionally. He is Jordan Tutu. And with all of the controversy going on surrounding Edmonton CFL franchise, whether a name change is needed, does that happen soon, where are they at in the consultation process, Jordan Tutu was asked by a lot of people to weigh in on this because Jordan Tutu is a Nook. And I will read you his statement and take your reaction to it as well. I know there are passionate people on both sides of the ledger, and we do need to have a greater conversation. This is the conversation they need to be having in Edmonton, and apparently they are. So here's what Jordan Tutu put out on social media yesterday. Many people and media outlets have contacted me to ask my position around the controversy surrounding the name of the Edmonton Eskimo CFL franchise. My position is this. We should all understand what the term means to the Inuk people. My father's generation connects with this term to describe who they are. He would refer to himself as Eskimo. My generation refers to itself as Inuk. What is important to me is that people understand this. And when referring to the Inuit people, they respect that we refer to ourselves today as Inuk. I understand there are names of sports teams that bring back feelings of oppression for people, and I can see why those names should be changed. So this makes me ask the question, does the term Eskimo for the Edmonton franchise bring back feelings of oppression for Inuk people? For me, it does not. That is not a reason to keep the name. There could be others for whom it does create those feelings, but for me, it does not. I encourage the franchise to explain why they chose the name Eskimos in the first place. Was it racially charged, or was it because of admiration for the ability of the Eskimos to thrive in cold climates, for their mental and physical toughness, and for their resilience? My point is that context really does matter, and they need to be honest with themselves and with the public. Truth goes a long way. In closing, the name of the Edmonton Eskimos is not objectionable to me. That does not mean they should keep the name. But I think the discussion should be around how the Inuk people feel about it. Some might feel pride, some might feel hurt. Either way, that is the group that should be consulted. That is an excellent, well-thought-out, well-reasoned statement from Jordan Tutu. And while he does not feel personally oppressed or aggrieved by the name, his point at the heart of this is absolutely the most salient one. How many people do? How many people in the community you are referring to feel oppressed, or does that bring back bad feelings? That is at the heart of this. It really doesn't matter what the 25-year season ticket holder thinks the name should be. It really doesn't. And I know that this is a business as well. But we're asking this franchise to do the right thing. And the right thing is the consultation process with the right people. And Jordan Tutu hit this on the head. It's a fantastic statement. I applaud him for it. I appreciate his honesty and the explanation. Because if you read that statement, if you just heard it on these airwaves, I think you probably learned something. I did. I learned something when I read that statement from Jordan Tutu yesterday about the history of the word, about how the context of the word for his father's generation differs from his context, his personal feelings on what the word means. Excellent statement from Jordan Tutu. Excellent. You have a reaction to that? We can talk about it here on this program. You've got the text numbers to get in on. There's another thing that happened yesterday south of the border that I do want to get into briefly here, because it does make me fear about what might lie ahead on this side of the border. And it has to do with an American university. Now, we all know things are going far differently in the United States than they are in Canada with respect to containing the spread of COVID-19. But could what we saw at Stanford University yesterday be a harbinger of what's to come for a number of Canadian universities? You don't have to be a massive college sports fan or have widespread knowledge of U.S. colleges to know this. Stanford is one of the standard-bearing academic institutions in the United States. You could argue on the planet, but in the United States, it is one of the standard-bearers academically. It is the standard-bearer when it comes to its athletic department. Some schools are great at football. Some schools are great at basketball. Some schools are great at both and a couple other sports. Stanford is good at everything. Stanford might not be Clemson in football, but always competitive in football, always competitive in basketball, your big revenue sports. But the Cardinal also churn out Olympic athletes like Alabama churns out NFL prospects, because their sports program traditionally has been so diverse and so well stocked. They offer programs many other schools do not. At least they did. Just to give you an example of how good Stanford has been, how strong the program overall with its athletic department has been, Stanford has won the Learfield Director's Cup for all sports excellence in 2019 for the 25th consecutive year. That's incredible. You know how many schools there are in the United States? For 25 consecutive years, here you go, all sports excellence, Stanford. Engrave it again. Yesterday, Stanford announced 11 varsity teams are going to be cut after this next academic season. 11 teams. That's of 36. That's almost a third of their varsity programs. Now, these aren't your big money sports, at least they're not big money generators. But here are just a few that are getting cut. Rowing, sailing, men's volleyball, wrestling, synchro swimming, those are among some of the programs that are out. Those might not be a big deal to you. You might not follow those sports, but at that school, with its tradition of strong, diverse programs, that is a big deal. And that has been the pathway for many Olympic athletes who have represented the United States, or other countries for that matter. It really sucks for the athletes. Let's start there. It really sucks for the athletes. Stanford is one of those places you aspire to go to. And listen, we've heard guys who've made it to the NFL, for example. Richard Sherman talks about it all the time. You don't leave Stanford. Once you get there, you're staying. Richard Sherman was offered an opportunity to leave. In fact, as the story goes, Jim Harbaugh may have tried to push him out the door, refused to. You know, you don't leave Stanford. Try explaining that. No, I'm staying at Stanford. Thank you very much. And so if you were in one of these sports that was cut, you aspired for a long time to get to Stanford. You're not only going to have that degree that gets you in so many doorways that other degrees do not, you're also going to go through this high-quality program with a high degree of getting to your desired outcome of the Olympics. So it really sucks for the athletes because you're going to have a number of them. And look, this is going for a lot of college sports right now. You're going to have a lot of these athletes in flux and the way they define themselves at this point of their lives and what they've committed themselves to. And the reason they chose the school in the first place was athletics. It sucks for the coaches too, but coaching overall is a nomadic experience. That's what you sign up for. You might get let go. You might get a better job opportunity. It just goes that way. It sucks for the coaches of these programs. It really sucks for the athletes because there are some that they went there. And yes, they had to have the academic backing to get there, but they went there because of the sport. And now what do you do? Do you just focus on athletics? Do you just focus on academics? Do you try to transfer to a different athletic program? But let's get back to the cuts overall. The big money sports, as I mentioned, they were not part of the cuts. Football and basketball are still there, among many other programs. There's another 25 varsity programs that, to this point in time, haven't been affected as far as their program ceasing to exist. But it leads to this question. If Stanford can cut more than two handfuls of programs because of a lack of funding, what does that mean for schools whose coffers do not run nearly as deep? And yes, I am talking up here north of the border. What are the most expensive programs to operate in university sport? You don't even have to know all of them that are offered. Football and hockey. And we hold them dear. I am a former college football player in the Canadian university system. I'm proud of that fact. I loved it. It was something that was very important to me at that point in my life. College hockey is very important in a lot of places. Well, we've seen some programs already say, we're not doing it this year. In the Canada West, all of the football has been canceled. All of the fall sports have been canceled. The University of Alberta a couple of weeks ago, and if you know anything about university sports, you know that they're maybe not Stanford, but as far as depth of field and excellence across the board, the University of Alberta is right up there. All of their programs are always competitive. Always. They might not win everything, but they have so many competitive programs. Well, not running hockey, not running basketball, not running volleyball this year. And at schools that might not have achieved the way Alberta has over the years, that might have just run across the wire. But I saw that. I see what happens at Stanford yesterday, and it makes me wonder how many of those in academic institutions will say, is this worth it? Is it worth the financial investment? UBC went through a big review a number of years ago, and a couple of the programs that were on the chopping block were football and hockey. Now, both of those programs were saved in different manners, but funding mechanisms were talked about, and how are we going to pay for this, and how much of it needs to be through donors, and how much of it can be through the university as it has traditionally been funded. But I see this yesterday, and Jamie, I'll bring you in for a quick comment before we get to what they're saying, and it gives me further evidence to worry, and I hope I'm wrong, but I worry that after we get on the other side of this, that there are going to be institutions specifically in this country that say, these programs cost so much money, I don't think we're going to run them anymore.
You're absolutely right, Scott. It's worrying on a couple of fronts. You know, you talked a lot about the stature of Stanford in the college athletics world in the States. It's a giant. You explained it really well. And if they are cutting back significantly, when we know how important athletics is to Stanford and how much pride they take in it, that's really, really worrisome for schools all the way down across the spectrum of university and college athletics. And the other factor that would concern me from a Canadian perspective is, you know, at least in big schools in the States, Stanford, Michigan, Texas, all those schools, they're making a ton of revenue from basketball and football. And maybe that can help subsidize some of these other programs. You know, no school in Canada is making huge bank off of any of their athletics programs. So that safety net doesn't exist for these programs. And in fact, as you said, hockey and football, two of the most popular programs, are also the ones that cost the most. They're not revenue making sports. They're revenue draining sports. So it is really concerning for people that value university sports. And I think for people who recognize how important they are to the overall sports culture in this country, it's going to be a dangerous time here.
Yeah, and I'm worried about Western Canada more than anywhere. And here's why. Proximity of teams to one another. And this has long been a part of the conversation. Guess what? UBC football, UBC hockey, they have to fly to play every single opponent. In Ontario, for example, your universities are much more closely clustered together. Bus travel, shocker, not as expensive as an airplane. And so that does make me worry about the future of these sports. Again, I hope I'm just being a little bit alarmist here. I hope I am absolutely wrong. And I do think these schools are going to look at different funding mechanisms. You have comments on that, you can get them in right now. We do have one more clue coming your way, but it's time for What They're Saying.
Bro, what are you talking about, man?
What are you saying?
Not saying anything.
You're saying something?
I guess that's what I'm saying, Brooksy.
Here's what they're saying.
I did want to hear from a former GM, and we have been soliciting opinion on this since we found out it was going to be a flat cap. If you've been listening to this program for a number of months, you know I've been speculating this the entire time, that the NHL would artificially flatten the cap so that there wasn't widespread financial chaos. But there will be opportunity here, as Brian Burke, former general manager in both Toronto, Vancouver, and obviously team president in Calgary, here's what he had to say about how the flat cap may affect player movement this offseason.
But the math doesn't work, and the league is gambling on a couple things, I think. That they'll let the players have the better of this deal for the first 2 years, flat cap, and again, I think the cap will be flat for 5 years, not two. And so I think they say when we get two things happen, we get a vaccine, and we get the crowds back, and we get the new U.S. TV deal in 2 years, and we can make some of these losses whole. Do I anticipate a lot of movement with a flat cap and so many teams bumping up against the cap? I don't think so. I think teams with cap room will be able to make some amazing deals. I think Seattle will be able to make some amazing deals with cap space. I think you'll see buyouts. I think buyouts that net you $500,000 worth of cap room that didn't make sense in the old system, you'd be like, well, I'm not doing that. We're not buying a guy out. It costs us $4 million and we pick up $1 million in cap room. I think you're going to see some of those now. To get that little sliver of cap room, I think you're going to see more buyouts. I think you'll see an offer sheet or two for sure. The reason teams don't do offer sheets is because teams just always match, and it's an exercise in futility. It's not a handshake agreement among the GMs. Offer sheets are rare because they don't work. They'll work now. There are teams that can't possibly match an offer sheet. So I think you'll see a couple of those, but I don't think you'll see a lot of movement except with the teams that have cap space. Like I'm reading an article this morning, and they said, well, the Leafs are in decent shape cap-wise, but they'll have to move Andreas Janssen, who's making $3.4 million, I think it was. I was just skimming before I came on the show. And I'm like, really? So who's going to take that player at $3.4 million? The answer is nobody. So I think you'll see some real hard decisions on the cap. I don't think you'll see a lot of player movement because of the cap, because teams can't do much, but teams with cap space will be able to make some amazing deals.
And you're going to have to see free agents maybe take far less term and figure out where their best short-term situation is. The other thing you are going to see, at least potentially, and I do think this is going to happen, what are teams close to the cap willing to get out, willing to give up to get out from bad contracts? What would you give New Jersey to take on Louis Erickson's contract? Does it have to be a player? Does it have to be a pick? And how rich is that market? New Jersey's not the only team with cap room. There are lots of others. Ottawa has lots of cap room. But if you want some other team to take on your bad contract situation, what are you willing to give up? And that will be more of a priority for teams this year than it has been in others. How important is it to you to get out from under that contract? Where do you find yourself in your competitive cycle that you need to re-sign a UFA? Or you've got an RFA that needs a big bump that you want to lock up for term, but you can't do it unless you move a bad contract. What are you willing to give up? Who becomes expendable in your prospect system, off your roster, and as far as future draft capital is concerned? That's where the opportunity lies. And I've talked about this a lot with regards to Seattle. Vegas made all of these deals, and that's not going to happen again. Well, maybe not in the same way, but Seattle's going to have the ability to acquire things that maybe they previously wouldn't have. Now you can just take a guy off a roster. But actually, we need you to suck up a little bit of money here because we find ourselves in a really tough situation. So we're willing to give up a pick if you take this player in trade as well. Can you help us out? Seattle will have some tinkering. That's certainly, it's fascinating to think about. I know we got a long way to go. We got a tournament to play before all of that is said and done. Speaking of tournaments, I mentioned this earlier. MLS playing. Played this morning. Philadelphia, Victors, Orlando last night, Orlando City, took care of Inter Miami 2-1. So they've been able to get through two matches. They've also had two teams that have been expunged from the tournament due to COVID concerns. The Vancouver Whitecaps have not played. They have a new team in their group by virtue of realignment because of these two teams getting jettisoned from the bubble. Chicago is now in the group with Vancouver. Speaking of Vancouver, one of their defenders, Jake Nowinski, he was on the morning show with Perry Solkowski and James Sobolski today, and he was asked, what is your level of confidence that Major League Soccer will continue to play this season beyond this tournament?
If I was asked that question maybe a few weeks ago before the spike in cases in the U.S., I would say yes. But right now, I just don't know with, you know, how everyone is handling it down, you know, in the States. I don't know if it's going to get any better. But if it stays like this right now, no, I don't see how we can possibly be playing games.
Do you feel safe?
You know what? I do. I actually do feel safe. I struggled with that too, you know, coming in because, you know, you hear stories from other teams, but just speaking from my experience and our team's experience so far, our first few days have been, you know, not that bad. We've thankfully had no positive cases, you know, through two rounds of testing and we're, you know, we're sticking to ourselves. We kind of created our own little bubble within a bubble. So I think, yeah, I do feel safe.
You get a sense of the anxiety, though. You absolutely get a sense of the anxiety. I'm not sure how we can play beyond this tournament, assuming we get through this tournament with the way things are going right now. There's a lot of apprehension in a lot of the players in this league, and it's a story that we'll continue to cover. I want to get you your last clue, and I will tweet out the visual clue momentarily. Here's your last clue in the Upper Deck Ingrained Hockey Card Set giveaway. Box, I should say. So this player has played for five different NHL franchises, but he's currently with the one that drafted him. He was selected by Vegas in the expansion draft, and here's your third and final clue. He played in the last two Stanley Cup finals, and he scored in each of them. Who are we talking about? You have the answer? Text it to 650-650 or 960-960. We will get two winners for you by the end of next segment. Greg Ballack just told me something in my ear, and I said, they did what? I'll tell you what it is next on the Scott Rintoul Show.
Now more of the Scott Rintoul Show.
The distraction mechanism continues. I'm Scott Rintoul. This is the Scott Rintoul Show. Thanks for joining us here today. We're making your day better. That's what we do. Brendan Morrison will help us do that in just a couple minutes' time. There are a couple of leagues right now. And listen, I understand kind of why they're doing this. It's long been the exercise. The, hey, don't look over here, look over here. We saw this executed perfectly by the New England Patriots a couple of weeks ago. Just as the New England Patriots were about to have the news hit that they had been fined and that they had lost a third-round draft pick for videotaping the Cincinnati Bengals sidelines. Just as they were about to do that, I want to say it was 16 minutes before, got leaked out that Cam Newton was signing in New England. Hey, don't look over here, look over here. And it worked. Nobody came on to the airwaves that Monday, because it was on a Sunday it happened. Nobody came onto the airwaves that Monday and said, hey, let's talk about the Patriots once again having sanctions placed against them. That was the sidebar story. It got mentioned, but Cam Newton's going to New England. Is this going to work? How did they get him at this low of a contract? How are they going to have to change their offense? Is he healthy enough? Oh, are the Patriots now the team to beat once again in the NFC East? That was the conversation. Well, they're trying it in a couple of other leagues. So two teams have expelled is the wrong word, but two teams have gone home from the MLS's back tournament. I told you this earlier in the program. Nashville, 9 COVID-19 cases. That's a pretty significant chunk of the roster. When you have a starting group of 11, a bench that includes up to 18 players, and a traveling team, I don't know, 24, 27, well, when a third of your entire roster or more than that has been infected with COVID-19 and you can't continue to spread or would hope to limit the spread throughout the rest of your tournament, okay, you guys have to leave. Dallas had 10 cases, so they're out. But while all this is happening, MLS is saying, hey, we're starting. Look at this. No, don't worry about those teams leaving. It's not a big deal. Our other tournament is starting. And hey, maybe they're able to execute the rest of the tournament, and this is something that is tough at the beginning, but people aren't talking about in a couple weeks' time. Major League Baseball is kind of doing that right now as well. And again, I understand wanting to put out positive news. But Major League Baseball, it's been such a cluster. That's the way it's felt from the ham-handed handling of their negotiations between the players and the owners, and it becoming about money instead of about health, and everybody seeing through any attempt to lead them elsewhere. Well, then they get here, and guys are testing positive, and we're not sure if we're going to be able to bring this team to this location, and how many tests do we actually have that are coming through? Guys, last week, we're getting tested on Friday. They didn't have those results by Sunday or Monday. It was nuts. It was extremely poorly executed. Well, with all that going on, you know what Major League Baseball did today? Here's next year's schedule. Forget about the fact we have not yet played a game, and many people right now have no idea whether or not we're going to be able to play one, let alone 60 per team this season. Forget about that for a second. Forget about the players opting out. We have next year's schedule for you. Here's something to look forward to. I can't believe they released it in this manner. I really can't. You would think they would want to get, I don't know, a week in, have us see some games, have people get a little bit excited about baseball. Does this work? It doesn't for me. If you're a massive baseball fan, does it work for you? It's one of the things I think the NHL did really well during the course of this pandemic. They slow played a lot of stuff. And there were some, and I think it was born out of, we want something to talk about. We want some news. Give us a topic. Come on, NHL, why are you dragging your feet? The NHL was very measured. They didn't come out right away and say, you know what, we got to be the first team back. We got to be the first league back. We got to have our product out there. Hey, there was behind closed doors, and we heard a little bit of this filter out. After the NFL draft, there was a push. Hey, maybe we should push our draft up. Maybe we should do this sooner. Maybe we should get eyeballs on our product. But that didn't happen because they took a measured approach. They talked through it and went, okay, we're rushing it. No point in doing that. And so the NHL didn't really announce anything till it felt more definite. And with the hub cities in particular, it worked out extremely well. You can say it wasn't all planned, but the fact that they didn't jump the gun, that they didn't try to rush all of it, has benefited the league. And it's led to a far greater level of confidence in what the NHL is going to attempt to execute than other leagues. And Major League Baseball has kind of done the exact opposite. Hey, we're going to open. Well, we're not really. I guess we can't really do that. And we don't really have an agreement. And hey, we're going to come to an agreement on this number. Well, actually, I didn't say we were going to come to an agreement. Man, every single time they've tried to put something on, this feels the exact same thing. Hey, I hope that baseball starts on time next year. That would be great because it means we're in a far better place with this pandemic. And financially, we're in a better place. But you're announcing this now? Just doesn't feel right. Do we have Brendan Morrison on the line there, Greg? Excellent. Brendan Morrison, our Thursday regular, joining us apparently from somewhere in the Pacific Ocean. How are you, sir?
Great, Scotty. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. That is a way to social distance, my friend. That is a way to physical distance. Just go in the middle of the ocean where no one else is.
I don't think there's a better place to social distance than being out on the water in this fresh air. It's a beautiful sunny day, and hopefully the fish are going to cooperate here.
Have they cooperated yet?
We're just about to put our lines in here, so it would be epic if we were able to hook up on air.
That would be fantastic. If you do, like, just take over the play-by-play if you're able to, Mo. Get the headset in, take over the play-by-play, and the floor will be yours at that point. I will cease to ask any questions. Brendan Morrison joining us this morning from the Pacific Ocean. Well, you've seen a lot of stuff released over the last little while. We've seen a CBA nearly ratified and voted on by the players. Feels like that's going to be pushed through. As a former player, what caught your eye with the extension that the league and the players have been able to put together?
Well, I think what was interesting is how quiet it was for so long. And I don't know if it was public knowledge for the longest time that they were working on an extension. And how they kept that quiet and how they were able to come to an agreement, I think it's fantastic. Obviously, there was a lot of uncertainty moving forward, and there still is some uncertainty moving forward. But I think, kind of puts minds at ease a little bit that, hey, we've extended this deal for a couple of years. We can focus on, the short term now. We don't really have to worry about that moving forward. And how can we best work with one another to do what we need to do to make this work?
You tell me if I'm wrong, but escrow has long felt like that lingering injury that you just never have time to get surgery for. And the fact that they have taken measures to mainly correct that injury within the CBA for the players, that to me feels like the biggest win.
Well, I agree. I think, I remember back in 2004-05 when we had our lockout there, and one of the topics at that time was escrow. Right. And it was such a foreign concept at the time because we didn't have it in our collective bargaining agreement. So there was a 24% rollback, and then they introduced escrow. And I remember in some of those meetings, there was conversations about, hey, what about this escrow? Like, should we have discussions about capping it or and it was just kind of pushed to the side a little bit because no one didn't truly understand it, I don't believe. And then, fast forward to the next lockout there in 2012-13. It was a topic that was much more on the forefront about how to try and cut that, if you will, or if you could. But, no parameters have been put in place. And I think now, players understand more. I think over the last 5 years, the average they've paid into escrow is about 11.5%. But I always found it entertaining that, even when I played from 05 on, we'd always put money into an escrow account. Once they would calculate the HRR over the summer, that figure would be released in September, usually during training camp. And then we would, get a portion of the escrow back. So, let's just say hypothetically, you put in 10% and they calculated, you owed 5%. So you'd get 5% of your money back. And guys are like, this is the best, man. I just got a check for 5%. And it's like, boys, that's your money, actually. Like, you just lost 5% of your money. So I think that thought process is, and it's more fully understood.
Yeah, I think most people can relate to that. People who get a tax return, Mo, they're like, this is incredible. I got money back. Well, yes, but it's because you overpaid on your taxes. Like, more of your money was taken away from you and you didn't have it in the interim. It's every one of us likes getting a check, but that was your money. It's not like somebody just decided to give you a handout.
Well, that's exactly it. You factor in, and I'm not feeling sorry for hockey players or athletes. I mean, they are paid very well, but on the other hand, there's a ton of sacrifices that go into it growing up. I mean, we can have that conversation another day, but, if you look at some places, tax rates are over 50%. You calculate an escrow of, in the past 5 years, about 11.5, next thing you know, you're losing over 60% of your paycheck to is gone, right? So, I mean, those are things that I think the players are concerned about, obviously, and want to try and, contain a little bit if they can.
Brendan Morrison joining us this morning. He's in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. He hasn't hooked one yet, but if he does, he's going to give us the play-by-play as we continue with this interview. From the players you've talked to that are still in the league or happen to be coaches in the league now, Mo, do you sense any apprehension about moving forward into these hub cities and the safety and health protocols that have been taken by the league?
Well, I think they've done a pretty good job so far. Like you were talking about earlier there, I mean, they weren't the first sport to come out and say, this is what we're going to do. They kind of, I think you know, Gary Bettman is a very smart man. He's done a good job running this league for a long time. He's increased the value of franchises and you know, exposed hockey to other places in the world. So for the most part, I think he's done a good job growing the game and increasing revenues. And, you know, they were methodical in their approach to it. You know, I think the biggest underlying factor for these guys, or a lot of guys wanting to go back to play, is money, is and escrow, like we just talked about. And the fact that there's been some reports that the league could lose up to $1.1 billion this year, and players would be on the hook for at least $550 million of that, like half of it. And I think that's the motivating factor for a lot of guys to go back. So not only this year, but moving forward too, okay, if we don't try and get this going again this year, how is that going to impact the game next year and our following, et cetera, and revenues? And again, what's the bottom line for me at the end of the day with my paycheck?
You mentioned Gary Bettman has grown the business extremely well during his tenure, even though there have been some peaks and valleys. He has never been the most popular guy among hockey fans, but the perception of him has changed in the last number of years. How about you, from your playing days to now? How has your opinion and perception of Gary Bettman changed?
Well, I think when you're a player and you know, there's ownership on the other side, there's always a little bit of a battle, or an enemy, if you will. That might be too strong of a word, but I think there's an appreciation for what he's done. And you know, anybody who has had interactions with him, they always leave that conversation commenting, "Man, like he's a really impressive guy." I remember our on a father's trip I had one time with, I believe it was when I was with Washington, and the team set up a meeting with Bettman and Daly and our fathers, and they got to have a question and answer with him for like an hour, which was pretty unique in New York City there. And I remember you know, talking to some of the fathers after that and how they were just blown away by, you know, kind of the insight he had and different things into the business and things that they had never really thought about. So I obviously, he's a sharp guy, and I think appreciation for what he's done is probably the right word.
Yeah, I agree with that. Based on your description of him, would you say there are a lot of similarities between your view on him and Lou Lamoriello?
Oh, 100%. Like, I mean, Lou is, you know, he runs a tight ship, as everybody knows. There's no denying that. But when you're in kind of in the moment and you don't really know any better, you kind of think, man, this is maybe a little too much at times. But once you step away from it and you go somewhere else, I mean, you really, again, appreciate the professionalism, you know, you know, he kind of teaches you in order to succeed. So, yeah, every guy that I know who's played for Lewis says the exact same thing about him, is very appreciative of their time with him.
Brendan Morrison joining us for a few more minutes this morning on the Scott Rintoul Show. The franchise we most closely associate Lou Lamoriello with, despite the fact he's with the Islanders, is the Devils, and they have made their hires. They've made them official today. Lindy Ruff is the coach. They take the interim tag off Tom Fitzgerald in the general manager's role. Around hockey fandom, there is this fatigue with certain coaches. And look, Lindy Ruff may be very successful there. He may be the right man for the job, but it wasn't met with this overwhelming positive response. Oh, Lindy Ruff again is kind of the way a lot of hockey fans were reacting to it yesterday. As a player, is that the reaction, or are players much more open-minded than that?
Yeah, I would say maybe a little bit surprised with the hiring. I know the coach, and he had a pretty good record there when he took over. I think he was a few games over 500. So I thought that, you know, I kind of... would have a good opportunity to move in there. But I think with the Devils and their organization, hasn't been like your typical, you know, top of the Eastern Conference standings, as you kind of think of them of. To me, this is kind of the safe move, right? It's the safe move. You bring in a guy who has been in the game for a long time. I think he, again, is pretty well respected. I never played for Lindy, so I can't comment on his style or not. I know some guys that have, but I think it's a safe move. Like, they're not going outside the box here. It's a little bit vanilla, but hey, I mean, sometimes that works.
Well, it's worked in Edmonton this past year. I think people would call Dave Tippett the safe move, and it has worked wonders for the Oilers. Now, the Devils haven't had the same type of coaching turnover in recent years that the Oilers have, but that has been a very good fit. But you talk about it being the safe move, not outside the box. European coaches, to me, are the most interesting aspect of this. Should organizations be more expansive, specifically with Europe, when it comes to their coaching search?
Well, I think you have to look at them. I mean, look what Buffalo did there with Kruger. And I mean, he was in Edmonton. I don't think he was given much of a chance in Edmonton. But I think, again, inside the hockey world, anybody who's played from him loves him or seems to love him. And I think that's the case, again, with the guys in Buffalo this year. I think they really, from what I've heard, they like him. Now, again, liking a coach and winning results that are two different things at times, but it's nice to like the guy, but at the end of the day, for the top down, you got to win. So, but I think there's no harm in looking at guys outside that have had success elsewhere. Absolutely.
Here's the other place that I wonder if the NHL will go in future years. We see a lot of ex-players get hired as head coaches eventually, but it doesn't happen as quickly as it does in some other sports. Major League Baseball is a very good example where guys can be finished playing and a couple years later they are managing a club. Would that work in hockey?
Yeah, there aren't too many Reg Dunlops in the NHL. Maybe no. A little bit in the minors. Maybe a little bit in the minors. I think... Yeah, I don't mind. I mean, it's done. It's been successful in baseball. I mean, the Yankees have done it. Red Sox have done it. I mean, there's several teams that have done it. But I can't see why it wouldn't work in hockey. I mean, obviously, as a coach, you have to have the right demeanor and personality and all that stuff. But, I mean, the right guy, I mean, absolutely. You step right out of the game, you're fresh, you know all the players, you know all the systems, you're not foreign to anything, and I think it'd be pretty seamless.
Well, the great fear is that the coach will continue to act as a player and that lines won't be able to be drawn. Do you think that would be an issue?
Well, again, I think that's it comes down to a guy's personality, right? And you know, I guess maturity level as well. And I think if you have the right person, they can do it, absolutely. I mean, there would be some guys that couldn't do it, for sure. But I think there's some people that could do it.
Okay, so I will put you on the spot. Is there a former player you played with over your career that you believe could have done that? The guy that you would nominate for that he could have stepped right out of the game, right onto a bench, and the respect level would have been given, and it would have been successful?
A couple guys. Scott Niedermeyer comes to mind. I think his teammates had so much respect for him. As a player and his confidence, but as a person, you know, just really calm demeanor, but, you know, was a leader in that way, no question. He's a guy that comes to the top of my mind right away.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. It's funny because Chris Pronger left the Panthers organization. I know he didn't go down the coaching road, but there's another guy that I would have thought, hey, universally respected, and if Chris Pronger went into a dressing room and said something, I don't think there'd have been any lip coming back.
No, I think Promise could do it too, but Promise gets a little emotional at times. he's not as even keel as God is.
Yeah, there's that. Hey, Mo, you're even keeled as always. We appreciate it. No fish on this particular phone call, but we wish you the best and continued safety and health for you and your family. My friend, get a great catch today. I look forward to maybe enjoying some of that fish with you at some point.
Well, I would love to have hooked up here, but it wasn't in the cards. But lines haven't been in that long. But if I get someone, I'll shoot you a picture for sure.
Beautiful. Thanks, Brendan.
All right, man. Take care.
That is Brendan Morrison. Joins us every Thursday here on the Scott Rintoul Show. And, yeah, think of a list of players. And obviously we don't have a lot of time before the end of the show today. But who are those guys that you could say, yep, you know what? I could tell this guy would be a great coach, and right after his career was done, he'd have enough respect from the players that they would understand that, hey, it's not quite the same. We can have a cordial relationship, and we can have good conversations, but there is a different level of respect, and there's a different hierarchy now that I'm going to have to adhere to as a player in this organization. We'll talk more about it as this show continues. The audio is now coming out of New Jersey, Tom Fitzgerald. He's had the interim tag removed. You'll hear him talk about Lindy Ruff. I imagine you're going to hear that in Calgary as well. In just a couple minutes' time, we're going to turn things over to Hockey Central 960. I did want to get you your winners today for the Upper Deck Ingrained Hockey Card Series giveaway. We're doing it every single day. We'll do it again tomorrow. Two boxes that we give away. Here were the clues for today's player. He's played for five different NHL franchises, but he's currently with the one that drafted him. He was selected by Vegas in the expansion draft, and he's played in the last two Stanley Cup Finals, and he scored in each of them. Many of you got that it was David Perron. You didn't even need the visual clue that I tweeted out at Scott Rintoul on Twitter. So we had a lot of qualifiers today. And our winners are Brett in Red Deer and Zach from Ladysmith. Congratulations to both of you. Jamie will be reaching out, getting your details, getting your addresses, so we can get those cards sent your way. You do have an opportunity to win again tomorrow. I know next week the cards will be given away on different programs, but our giveaways cease tomorrow as well. Our program for the first couple of hours, at least all of us being together, it is about to cease momentarily. As mentioned, in Calgary, we will turn you over to Hockey Central 960, everything that's going on with the New Jersey hire. And we will start talking more hockey here in Vancouver. At least we'll continue doing the exact same thing. Not only will I get you that audio out of New Jersey, the captain of the Canucks, Bo Horvat, is set to be on a conference call momentarily. We'll get you that audio. And the most interesting situation with Judd Brackett and the Minnesota Wild that could unfold this year, I'll explain it to you next on the Scott Rintoul Show.
This is the Scott Rintoul Show.
Besser shoots and scores right off the draw.
First career NHL goal, Quinn Hughes.
On the official home of the Canucks.
And it's Markstrom again, this time with the glove.
Elias covers it and shoots, scores!
Sportsnet 650.
Judd Brackett is signed, and a lot of you are interested in that. And yet, it won't matter for quite a while. It won't matter because likely the fruits of his labor and the fruits of the labor of the Canucks scouting staff won't come to fruition for a while. So we're going to have to wait and see. I'm not trying to spin this as, oh, Judd Brackett was so expendable. I can't even believe they kept him employed for the... No, not at all. Judd Brackett was a valuable member of the Vancouver Canucks organization. He deserves credit for the last number of drafts, which he has been a major part of. And if he wanted more and the Canucks were unwilling, it can still work out well for now the Minnesota Wild and the Vancouver Canucks. There are some within Canucks Nation who are less than confident that with what the Canucks currently have in their scouting system, they're going to be able to cobble together a draft. And that perception is misguided. Like anything else, you kind of have to wait and see. How do they do now? How did the scouts that were under Judd Brackett perform? How did some of those that he has been in constant contact with, some of whom affected his opinions about players, how do they perform as they perhaps have a larger role in the scouting for this organization? How have Jim Benning's methods changed and his own opinions changed as a result of those two men working together? It's not really fair to either party, quite frankly, to lay all of the credit or all of the blame for the hits and the misses along the way. That doesn't mean it's not interesting, because it is interesting, and it does feel like it's more interesting in Vancouver than maybe in other markets, but I digress. The reason it is, of course, is because what do you sell your fan base on? You sell your fan base on hope. It's either hope that your team is good enough that year to compete for a Stanley Cup, or where the Canucks have been most recently, hope that things are going to turn around and that eventually you're going to get there. And there are indicators that they are going to, and a number of those indicators are attributed to amateur scouting, which, of course, Judd Brackett was in charge of. I will give you the most interesting situation. Here's why it adds a level of intrigue, and it's not because of the situation you fear the most. It's not. I saw it thrown out there today. Bick Nizar is going to run Social Distance Central, Canucks Central, whatever you want to call it right now. It's going to start in less than an hour. He and Brendan Batchelor will be on that program today. And they will have their opinions on this as well. The most interesting situation isn't the one you fear the most. There are some that said, hey, team tank, the Canucks aren't good enough to win this tournament. You might as well lose the play-in series. Take your 12.5% shot. And if you don't get that, well, at least you're going to be making a draft pick this year. It does put a little pressure on next year, because all of a sudden New Jersey holds that pick that earlier had been traded to Tampa Bay, has since been flipped to New Jersey in the Blake Coleman deal. So they know they have the Vancouver Canucks first-round draft pick next year, but I would rather draft this year than last year. Okay, as a fan, you're free to think that way if you choose to. Your call. But that's not the Minnesota Wild losing to the Canucks in the play-in round and winning the first overall pick. That is not the most interesting situation. That might be the one you fear the most. Hey, another Western team gets Alexei Lafreniere. If it's not going to be the Canucks, I'd rather that guy was playing in the East. Don't impact our chances. The most interesting situation is actually, from a Judd Brackett perspective only, the most interesting situation is if Minnesota loses to Vancouver, Pittsburgh beats Montreal, and the Wild do not, I repeat, do not win the number one overall pick. Because the number one overall pick isn't changing whether Judd Brackett's running the draft, whether Jim Benning's running the draft, whether Bob Down Your Block is running the draft. If the Canucks or the Wild or any of those teams who lose the play-in round get number one overall and they actually choose to exercise the pick, we know who's going to be taken there. That's not where the level of expertise comes in. It's what happens if you are drafting in the middle of the first round. And that's where it gets more intriguing from a Judd Brackett perspective. So the reason I mentioned Pittsburgh is this. Minnesota has its own first-round pick. And it knows that if it loses this play-in round to the Canucks, it's got a shot at number one overall. But if not, it's going to be a pick in the top 15. That's what Minnesota knows. They also get the Pittsburgh Penguins first-round pick, which they acquired in the Jason Zucker deal, if Pittsburgh isn't in the lottery. So we got that clear? So Minnesota could have two first-round picks. Now, if Minnesota is drafting 10th overall and call it whatever, I don't know, 20th overall, those picks are more intriguing because those picks require more opinion than Alexei Lafreniere requires. Those picks are the ones that can land you a David Pastrnak in the 20s, can land you a Brock Besser in the 20s, or you could just happen to whiff on. Those picks are where you really need to have convicted opinions from your scouts. And yes, there is less pressure when you draft 20th overall or 23rd overall because we all know the percentages go down. But if you hit on those are star maker opportunities. Hitting on Elias Pettersson at 5th overall, that is a star maker opportunity. And while the Wild won't draft that high, we've seen 10th overall picks, we've seen 12th overall picks go on to stardom in the National Hockey League. And that's where there becomes such a greater variance of opinion in the draft. That's when it gets really interesting. So if you're looking for the most interesting storyline when it comes to Judd Brackett and the Vancouver Canucks, that's the most interesting. It's not the one that Canucks fans necessarily want to transpire. There are some of you that would like the Canucks to lose in this play-in series and guarantee a lottery pick, guarantee that they're going to be drafting in the first round this year. And there are others who are completely opposed to that. Nope, I just want to see the Canucks go as far as possible, and this experience for the young players means the world. But if you're looking for the Judd Brackett angle, I just laid it out for you. And it's not the angle you fear the most, which is the one that has the Minnesota Wild landing the number one overall pick. We will get more Minnesota Wild talk. We'll get more Judd Brackett talk, some insight into that organization at the bottom of the hour when Michael Russo of The Athletic, the guy who broke this story, joins us from Minnesota. We'll get his take on it. We'll get this coming in. People just ripping the Vancouver Canucks drafting with no Judd Brackett again. Frequent texter, always unsigned. With Judd Brackett gone, Benning will go back to drafting rocks and jock straps. Jim Benning wouldn't know a good pick if it was in front of him. Virtanen and Ylevi. Jim Benning, Besser, Pettersson, and Hughes all attributed to Judd Brackett. Doesn't really work that way. I know fans want to make it that simple. Hey, Jim Benning gets all of the misses and Judd Brackett gets all of the hits. It's not that simple. It really isn't. To make it that benign, or to make it as simplistic as that, I mean, I understand why fans do it. It's just not the way organizations work. But you're free to weigh in. We're free to have conversations about it. Appreciate you contributing to the program today. I want to get you some audio out of New Jersey. Bo Horvath is on a conference call right now. We'll try to turn that audio around for you as soon as we possibly can in New Jersey. And this is a good conversation we were having earlier in the program, the hiring process. Same texter, by the way, says he'd rather have Lindy Ruff coaching the Canucks than Travis Green. I think you're in the minority, but who knows? Maybe there's some who share your opinion. Lindy Ruff does get the gig in New Jersey. Tom Fitzgerald remains the general manager. They've taken interim away. He's just a full-fledged general manager of the Devils now. Did the conference call today, and here's what Fitzgerald had to say about the hiring process he went through and why Lindy Ruff eventually won out.
The process that we went through for the coaching search was extensive. It was long. Personally had conversations with a bunch of candidates, great candidates, anywhere between 3 and 5 hours on Zoom. At one time, and then doing deep dives with systemic play, how we want to play, how these people wanted to play the game, how I feel the game should be played, and what kind of game my team wants to play, I guess. As the process continued to move forward, you know, Lindy just continued to step to the forefront. One, I was looking for experience. NHL head coaching experience. Two, a presence. Someone who's been there, done that, and could walk into a room and actually grab the attention of our young team with the experience that they've gained over the number of years as a head coach. Personality. The group needs a teacher, someone who's going to come in and teach, and message is going to be extremely clear. No gray at all in the messaging. Believable, which goes with, you know, presence. And as we kept going deeper into that process in with questions, the infectious personality that Lindy Ruff has is a big part of who he is. He's a light-hearted person. He's played the game. He's coached young talent. Another criteria could be able to coach young talent and watch them develop into budding stars, like he did with a core young players in Buffalo and core performers right now in Dallas. That was another big element. So the more we kept digging, the more Lindy kept rising. And I felt that it was very important to put Lindy Ruff in front of Marty Brodeur to get Marty's take on Lindy and put him in front of Josh and David during this process. So those characteristics and elements were things that I was looking for as a whole. And like I said, as the process continued, Lindy continued to grow and grow and grow, and to the point where I felt relationship wise, which is a big thing for a manager, was there already. It was exciting, and how collaboratively with each other, you know, through my own experience and learning from him too, from his experience. So as far as teamwork, I felt Lindy Ruff was the best person for this job.
That's a very extensive answer. And there are a number of things that Tom Fitzgerald hit on there, and you're going to hear more from him in just 1 second, because this is a big topic of conversation over the last few days with news of what the new CBA looks like and the financial landscape of the NHL moving forward. But he talked about relationships, and it's something that perhaps we overlook, and it shouldn't be. I said that at the top of the list has to be communicator, and often we look at that as just from the head coach down. So communication between the players, it's vitally important in today's day and age. This is no longer a dictatorship. It's a collaborative process and needs to be so. So there's that relationship. But what Tom Fitzgerald referenced there, the relationship with the general manager, it's ultra important. Ultra. And the crazy thing to me in professional sports is how often you see across not just hockey, but all pro sports, the general manager have a different vision than the head coach. You think that's where it would have to start. You think that the synergy that exists between that level of the organization and the one below it has to be there if you're going to function properly. And yet in so many cases, it doesn't work out that way. You see these power struggles in organizations where the head coach is on a different page than the general manager, and they want different kinds of players, and they have different ideas about how they're going to operate. And if you do have those different ideas, who has to be malleable? Is it the head coach? Is it the general manager? Who needs to have the open mind? We saw this play out in Toronto. Mike Babcock had a completely different vision for how the team should play, needed to play if it was going to be successful, than Kyle Dubas. And Mike Babcock refused to employ the pieces in the way Kyle Dubas set them out there. And ultimately, that's why Mike Babcock was on his way. General managers almost always win that power struggle. Not in every situation, but in most of them. But it's crazy to me that it doesn't start there more often. One of the reasons Patrick Mahomes gave for signing the insane contract extension that we know isn't going to play out to its fullest, but is a 10-year contract extension, is that in Kansas City, from ownership to management to head coach, there is synergy and there is conviction in one belief. Doesn't mean you can't disagree on a player here or there, but the philosophy overall, it's aligned. We've talked about that in Seattle. Now, the Seahawks have had mixed results lately, but it's not because John Schneider and Pete Carroll are on different pages. And yeah, you have to be able to adapt with the times, and some of the regimes that are very synergistic, eventually time catches up with them or they don't adapt well enough, and you have to make a change overall. That can happen. But the best organizations have that alignment from the top on down. And we don't talk about it often enough. He also said experience. And this market can understand that. Look, we had one texter who's not thrilled with Travis Green, isn't a big Travis Green fan. There's always going to be some detractors. I think, by and large, Canucks fans think Travis Green is a very good head coach and has done a very good job, by and large. But what did we hear with Willie DeJardin? Look, you wanted something different? Well, when the Canucks hired Willie DeJardin, that was different. That wasn't a guy who'd been brought up through the organization. That wasn't a guy who'd held an NHL coaching gig. And he was a hot commodity at the time. When Barry Trotz got hired in Washington, there are a lot of people in hockey went, that's a great hire. He's a good head coach. And there were a lot of people around hockey went, the guy who couldn't get guys to score down in Nashville, that's who they hire with the Capitals? Oh, boy, he's going to turn these Capitals into a defensive team all of a sudden. Barry Trotz, good coach, really good coach. But when he was hired by the Capitals, there were many in the hockey world who viewed that as a retread hire. We look at Barry Trotz far differently now than many did when he was hired by the Capitals prior to getting on board with the New York Islanders. And look, it was celebrated by many in this market when Willie DeJardin was hired because the Canucks kind of won a little power struggle between the Penguins and the Canucks, both bidding for Willie's services at the time. And Willie had the great first year and then couldn't adapt. His systems just didn't work overall. And we all know how it ended. Great guy, has been effective at other levels. Wish him all the best. It just didn't work at the National Hockey League level for Willie DeJardin here or when he took, which was a pretty risky environment in L.A., and he said, well, I'm going to bet on myself because I'm not sure I'll ever get another opportunity. It didn't work out there either, and Willie DeJardin is back, and he can be an effective coach at the level he's at, but it's probably not going to be again for him at the National Hockey League level. You can get your texts in, 650-650, if you want in on the conversation. I do want to get to one other comment from Tom Fitzgerald because it's very relevant as to what we're going to be talking about in Vancouver over the next little while, the cap situation and what it means for the Canucks trying to get some of their unrestricted free agents under contract and what they do with some of their restricted free agents on this roster. New Jersey is one of those. New Jersey is one of those that has a bunch of cap space this year. Here's Tom Fitzgerald's opinion on that.
There could be an opportunity for our organization to, you know, get a little bit ahead of where we probably estimate ourselves prior to the pandemic. I touched on, you know, very consistent with my message on, you know, where we are as an organization, where we need to go, and the steps to get there. And, you know, you've heard me talk about learn the win phase, and it's a very important part of, you know, building a winning culture for a young team. With that being said, you're right. Cap space is a major, major weapon, and we have that. So that we don't ever want to get ahead of ourselves, excited about what can be. But as the manager, and with the help I have that surrounds me, we're going to do our best to put the best team on ice. And if that accelerates where we're at in this process, even better.
So what does that mean for a team like the Vancouver Canucks? I mentioned this earlier in the program. It's going to be a conversation we have here over the next few months. We will gladly welcome the distraction of hockey on the ice as opposed to talking about financial situations when it arrives, and hopefully they're able to play it through. But we are going to be talking about what the Canucks do with their cap situation and what do they do with Jacob Markstrom. Where's that line in the sand? What does the term of his deal look like? And are you able to maneuver enough so that you have a chance at re-signing Tyler Toffoli as well? And with Troy Stetcher, is that RFA number just going to be too rich for the Canucks? Chris Tanev, sorry, are you a cap casualty? What about other players on the roster? Can you get out from under these contracts? Can a team like New Jersey say, look, yeah, I understand Louis's a problem, but we'll take that problem for a certain price. That price may, in fact, be too high for the Vancouver Canucks, but that's going to be a conversation. Get in on this conversation right now, 650-650. I just got word. Bo Horvat, the captain of the Vancouver Canucks, is going to join us in 11 minutes time. So we will talk to Bo after he finishes his conference call with reporters all around Van City. Something was proven to me yesterday, though. For as much as fans gripe about NHL awards and who votes on them, and they rip the writers for some of their votes, and they rip the broadcasters for some of their votes, and they rip the general managers for some of their votes. Ah, they're too close to it. They're just a bunch of hockey guys. Nobody can be trusted. Nobody can be trusted when it comes to voting. And this was proven by Canucks fans yesterday, who I believe are very well educated, who keep up with things, have very strong opinions. I think it's a very knowledgeable fan base. But JT Miller was given the Canucks' most unsung award. He was the unsung hero of the Vancouver Canucks this year. How, sir, is that possible? Or madam, for that matter. How is that possible? The definition of unsung is someone who does not generally get praise. Someone who is behind the scenes. For example, if we were giving out unsung hero awards for our station, nobody who's on air on a full-time basis would be eligible for those awards. Because those people, myself included, you hear us all the time. The unsung hero would be a producer, an operator, somebody goes above and beyond that you don't generally hear about. Greg Ballack has nominated himself. He has already cast his vote. Congratulations, Greg, and maybe the votes will pour in for you. JT Miller is not the Canucks' unsung hero. I know why he got the award. He had a fantastic season. He is an excellent player. But if you were in the conversation for the MVP of the team, which he was, came down to three guys. Is it going to be Markstrom, who ultimately won it? Is it going to be Pettersson? Is it going to be JT Miller? If you're in that conversation, if you're a finalist for that award, you're not unsung. People have recognized how much you contributed. People have brought attention to how much you contributed. And so they should, because JT Miller, game in, game out, was a talking point, and almost always in a positive manner. People just wanted to recognize him. People went, okay, well, if he's not going to be the most exciting player, which is Quinn Hughes, and he's not going to be the team MVP, which is Jacob Markstrom, we got to give him something. We got to show JT Miller that we really appreciated his contributions. I know it doesn't really fit, but here you go. You're the unsung hero. Nobody can be trusted is what I am telling you. Bo Horvat joins us next right here in your home of Canucks hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Blue line goes back to Miller, left circle, slap pass side of the goal for Toffoli, in front, Horvat scores! The captain scores his team-leading 12th power play goal of the year!
Now more of the Scott Rintoul Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Canucks captain Bo Horvat, yes, he is in Vancouver, apparently all 34 Canucks players who will participate in training camp are in the Lower Mainland right now. How long have they been here? Depends on which guy you're talking about. Horvat slated to be right here in just a couple minutes' time. He's finishing up a conference call with all of Vancouver media and other NHL media, and then he will join us right here in your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Get your comments in, 650-650. I didn't even realize this. Greg, when you told me earlier in the program today that Major League Baseball had announced its schedule. I saw some dates coming out for various teams, and people were highlighting potential matchups for next year. Again, this is a league that has not played a game this year, and people have a lot of doubts about whether they're going to get going later this month, let alone next April, but they put out their schedule today anyway. It's almost like they're trolling us. I swear, it's almost like they're trolling us. Did you see the start date for every team in Major League Baseball next year? Do you see what date it is? It's April 1st. That feels appropriate right now with what's going on, and I am hopeful that things go forward. I want every business to get back up and running, not just those in sports. I want those in our communities to get back up and running, those who've been hit by actual real hardships. And when it comes to sports, I'm talking about the people who work at the arenas and the people who are living week to week, month to month, as opposed to people who have a little more of a war chest and, quite frankly, could afford to be out of work for a few months. So I'm worried more about those people. But I want Major League Baseball to get going. I want soccer and football and hockey and basketball. I want them all up and running. But it does feel like a bit of a troll job when you haven't even played a game this month and you announce, guess what, all 30 teams will open on April Fool's Day next year. It does feel a little bit appropriate. We're going to get to Bo Horvat here in just a minute. If you're just joining the program today, the things that have been making news in the hockey world, Lindy Ruff hired by the Devils, that appointment has been made official. Tom Fitzgerald, he had a conference call with reporters today. We played some of that audio for you last segment. Judd Brackett. That is the big news in Canuckville, that Judd Brackett has been hired by the first-round opponent. Not first-round, I guess. Play-in round opponent. Qualifier. They're calling them the Stanley Cup qualifiers. The Minnesota Wild have hired Judd Brackett to head up their amateur scouting. Bill Guerin not waiting long to make that happen as he continues to put his stamp on that organization. He's got other decisions to make, and how far does this playoff series and any potential run for the Minnesota Wild go to determining whether or not Dean Evason gets to go beyond this year? Has Bill Guerin made up his mind on that? How much could this run influence it? I mean, the guy wins a Stanley Cup somehow, some way. I tend to think that would influence it. Probably keep your job. Craig Berube, he knows about that. Otherwise, does Bill Guerin have other plans? We will wait and see. So those are the big stories in the hockey world right now. Certainly Judd Brackett being hired by the Wild is a big one in Vancouver Canuckville, and we'll have to wait to see it play out and where do the Wild pick this year and how much influence is Brackett able to have. I guess the one thing, in a normal year with your contract expiring at the end of June, you wouldn't have any influence on that year's draft with the team that you would sign on with. This year, unique situation, Judd Brackett will have a high degree of input. Greg, did you say we have Bo Horvat there already? We do not. Sorry, I thought I heard you in the background. This is just one of the pleasures of working from home, that sometimes you hear things you think you didn't. Maybe it was my kids upstairs. Who knows? We're going to get to a couple other things this segment as well. Hopefully I'm going to get a chance to run you some audio from Jake Nowinski, defender with Whitecaps FC. And the MLS Is Back tournament has started. Started last night. Powerful demonstration. Yes, it's orchestrated, but it was a powerful 8-minute, 46-second demonstration prior to the tournament kicking off. Players dressed in Black Lives Matter shirts and various other messaging around the park. And those who are not participating from other teams were standing with one fist raised. The players who were actually on the pitch were kneeling. It was a powerful demonstration. It was a powerful signal to show everybody who is tuning in where MLS stands. They get through the first match last night. There's another match this morning. By the way, the Whitecaps have a 6 a.m. match coming. Because of the flux this tournament has been thrown into, and if you haven't been paying attention, fair enough, FC Dallas and now Nashville FC both had to leave the bubble. Both had too wide an outbreak within their rosters of COVID-19 to continue in the tournament. They presented too high of a risk, not only for their own clubs, but for other clubs that they're going to be participating against. So they go from 26 down to 24, which means Vancouver's group, which is Group B, which lost FC Dallas, and Group A, which lost Nashville FC, they've decided to even things up. The math now works. You had six groups to begin with. Five of them featured four teams. One featured six. Pretty simple to understand. Hey, with 24 teams, we can make six groups of four. which is what they will now do. Chicago Fire joining Group B with Vancouver. And so when Vancouver and Chicago play, I believe the date is July 23rd, 6 a.m., if you are an early riser and you are a soccer fan, you're going to get to see the Whitecaps at that time. If not, wait for the replay or use the old PVR. I'm Scott Rintoul. This is the Scott Rintoul Show. But yes, I would like to play the clip of Jake Nowinski for you later this segment. I thought it was very telling what he told our guys on the morning show today. But prior to that, it is the captain of the Vancouver Canucks, newly minted father as well. He is Bo Horvat joining on your home of Canucks Hockey, Sportsnet 650. Bo, thank you very much for doing this and congratulations.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Really difficult, I imagine, to, as a father myself, have your firstborn come into this world, go through that completely over-the-moon process, and then have to leave right away. What was that like for you?
Yeah, it was probably the best week and the toughest last couple of days of my life. No, it was obviously the best week because, like, bringing him into the world was unbelievable. And my wife and I couldn't be happier to have him in our lives now. And to leave him on Sunday was probably the toughest day thing I've ever had to go through. Just not knowing when you're going to see him next is probably the hardest thing. So, it was definitely tough, but, we're going to make it through.
I think any parent out there can relate. What is the over-under on FaceTime calls per day right now?
Yeah, a lot. They're probably getting sick of me by now, calling in all the time, but I want to see him as much as I can. Hopefully he doesn't forget about me.
I went through this when I was first a parent, and I was traveling a little more than I was now, Bo. I wondered to myself, because I would use the FaceTime as well, how did parents do it before that, man? It would have been difficult, don't you think?
No, exactly. Yeah, that's... I don't know what we do without a lot of technology these days.
Bo Horvat joining us here on your home of Canucks Hockey, Sportsnet 650. You're using the FaceTime because you're here in Vancouver. You're getting prepped for this tournament. Where is your level of excitement and motivation right now?
Yeah, I mean, like, all things considered, I'm really excited. I'm excited to get back playing competitive hockey again and fighting for a Stanley Cup. You know, it's what we set out to do at the beginning of the year, and we finally get to do it. And I'm really excited for it.
How would you describe the condition you're in right now and how close you are to being ready to go?
I'm ready. I was lucky enough to be skating back home. I've been out here skating for 3 days now, and I'm ready to get things ramped up for camp and get playing some hockey games. I'm tired of waiting around, and I want to get things going here.
Like Canucks fans, you've had a lot of time to sit and think about the season that was before it was put on hold on March 11th. I'm not sure how much of an indicator this tournament is going to be because it's so unprecedented as to what kind of step your team has taken. But as you look back on the 69 games your team did play, Bo, when you look at it, how far did you come? How big a step was taken?
I thought we took another step this year again. I think we're heading in the right direction, playing good hockey. I think we were giving ourselves every opportunity to make the playoffs this year, and I think we're having a good year. And obviously, there's still things we have to work on, still things we have to get better at. But for the most part, I thought we took a step in the right direction, and here we are. We're fighting for a Stanley Cup now.
So we can all see the wins and losses that you were obviously better from that standpoint than you were a year ago. But outside of that, where do you think this team made the most improvement?
I just think consistency was a big thing in our game. You know, I think in years past we went through these droughts where we'd lose a lot of games, and I think this year we stayed consistent. You know, obviously staying above 500 and then having a better record definitely helped us out a lot. But I think defensively we got better, and that helped out our game a lot too.
Bo Horvat joining us here this morning, getting set for training camp, which is set to get going on Monday, assuming the vote goes through. I imagine you're very optimistic about the vote for the players?
Yeah, I am. I think a lot of guys were happy about it. Obviously, you know, nothing's perfect, and you can't get 700 guys on one page, but I think for the most part, everybody's excited about it. Everybody was happy with the deal, so we'll see how the vote goes, but... I think things are gonna go well.
I know you've only been a father for a little while now, but you do tend to look at things a little bit differently when you have more people that you're responsible for, certainly the next generation. Do you have any apprehension whatsoever with health, safety, and the protocols that are in place?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, with everything going on, it's a lot. But I feel, you know, all the protocols and all the steps that they've taken to make sure it's the safest place, basically, you know, for us to go into and be in there for months at a time, I think all the steps and precautions they took, you know, it's going to be the safest place for us to be. And I'd feel safe after leaving there to go back home to my family and you know, not be concerned for their health and safety as well.
A big way that this tournament gets off the ground is that the players in their respective cities right now, as they go through training camp, are responsible and they're taking care of themselves and they're doing all of those practices that has helped Canada flatten the curve and diminish the cases. As the captain of the team, do you feel responsible to address your group about that?
I think guys are smart enough that they know. You know, we all know that, you know, we can't just be thinking about ourselves. We have to think about not only our teammates and guys with families, but everybody else in the community. And, you know, like you said, trying to keep flattening the curve, keep, you know, guys, you know, washing their hands and wearing face protection and stay away and stay isolated, because, you know, it's going to affect everybody around you. And I think guys realize that and we know what we have to do.
You have the benefit of being in Vancouver, which has been as good as any place in North America with how it has dealt with this particular pandemic. But you have friends around the league. Do you talk to guys in other cities and that are getting back for their training camps that are a little more nervous where they might be closer to hotspots?
Yeah, well, I mean, you hear different stories and you hear what's going on in the U.S. And I'm not trying to bash the U.S. or whatnot, but you know, obviously their numbers are climbing, and you know, there are a lot of more hotspots than there are anywhere in North America. So obviously it is concerning for those guys, but you know, I think as long as they stay away from big crowds, again, you know, follow all the right protocols to stay healthy, then you know, yeah, they should be fine. But again, it is scary going back to the high case areas and hotspots. So definitely wouldn't be, it would be a little uneasy going back there for sure.
Bo Horvat joining us this morning on your home of Canucks Hockey, Sportsnet 650. You're getting ready for the play-in portion of the tournament and hopefully the playoff portion of the Stanley Cup tournament this year as well. It's been a long time, Bo. Do you remember what playoff hockey's like?
No, I mean, yeah, it has been a long time, but when I was playing, it's the best hockey to play. You know, just it takes the entire thing just takes it to another level. And, you know, I find that's when I'm at my best when we're playing playoff hockey. So I can't wait to get started.
You've been there before, but it was brief. How much does a young player like yourself lean on a JT Miller or other young guys in your group for that matter?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, everybody's JT has played a lot of playoff hockey along with a lot of other guys that have played a lot of playoff hockey. So they know what it takes. They know what they have to do to win. And, you know, so to have that supporting cast around me definitely makes it a lot easier.
I know it's not only on one guy, and I know the room's made up of a lot of different personalities, but he brought something this year and he brought a different attitude. How much did that attitude become infectious within your group?
No, I think, yeah, you're right. We got to stay positive. We can't dwell and be negative, and we have to make the most of it. We have to be positive. We have to realize the task at hand and the main goal at the end of this. So for us to stay positive and be willing to do what it takes to win, I think is going to be the biggest thing for us.
Did this group develop a little bit of swagger this year at all?
Yeah, I think so. I think we definitely gained some confidence, that's for sure. You know, being able to win as many games as we have, and you know, I think it just gives our group confidence, it gives individuals confidence, and I think it just feeds our group at the end of it all.
You're still a young guy in this league, but you're not as young as some of your teammates. Elias Patterson, second year. Quinn Hughes, first year. What impressed you most about the way they conducted themselves?
Yeah, I mean, they played unbelievable this year. They were a big reason why we were so successful. You know, we're lucky to have those guys in our team, and you know, I think to have them and having them go into the playoffs is going to give them more experience and know what it takes to win.
You played the Minnesota Wild three times this year. What's your view on your opponent for this play-in series?
I mean, I think it's going to be tough. They're a great hockey team. You know, they're going to play us tough. They're going to play us hard. They're going to they have some playoff experience over there, so we got to be ready to go.
Well, you're getting a little more sleep than you might have at home with a newborn. I know it's tough on you. Continue those FaceTime calls. Thanks for making a little bit of time for us. Stay healthy, stay safe, and get ready for the end of this month, all right?
Thank you very much. Take care, you guys.
We will. That is Bo Horvat, captain of your Vancouver Canucks. Said the best week, then the toughest day maybe for him. And anybody who's a parent out there understands exactly what he is talking about, that new little person that's a part of you comes into your life, and it's this overwhelming feeling. And we got a couple of young dads on this show. I consider myself young because my kids are young. Jamie, of course, you've got a child as well, so you know what that's like. It would be tough, I imagine. And listen, I know people go, they get paid a lot of money, it's no big deal. Jamie, I think you can agree, having become a father in the last couple of years, how difficult it would be to all of a sudden be ripped out of that situation for up to 3 months.
Oh, it would be enormously difficult. I mean, especially when it's your first time becoming a dad, and there's so much you don't know. There's so much you're learning. It's such a special time to have together with your family. I can only imagine to leave after a week. I mean, my daughter's just over two. Even now, being asked to spend 3 months away from her would be really, really hard, and let alone in the first, you know, couple of weeks of her life. So you heard it from Bo Horvat, and yeah, I think anyone who's a parent can relate to that. It would be so, so difficult to do that.
I'll tell you this. He sounds like a guy who is dialed in as far as his focus goes right now. Hey, where are you with your conditioning and your motivation? He said, I'm ready. Like, that guy wants to play hockey tomorrow. And I imagine it's going to be widespread like that around the league. And yes, there is going to be some anxiety, and I do believe we're going to see some players opt out. I don't know if any of them will be a part of the Vancouver Canucks, but I think by and large, this is a group that feels very confident. And I'm talking NHL fraternity here. I think they feel very confident about the measures that have been taken, about what's been put in place, and it allows them to focus on the task at hand. Some of that, I think, when you're a young player, I think some of that is ignorance or naivete. I think that's exactly what it is. You just don't know any better. You're only thinking about that. You don't have the type of context in your life to think about things beyond your job or a Stanley Cup run. And then there's other guys, I think, that their minds will have been put at ease. And I think the NHL has done a very good job. Again, stand to be proven wrong. Maybe there's widespread opting out. I just don't get the sense it's going to be like that in this sport. I do want to get this Jake Nowinski clip in here. He was on our morning show today, and I thought this was a very telling clip. He is, of course, part of the Whitecaps. They're down in Orlando. Two teams have had to leave. The other 24 remain. Whitecaps, their first match was supposed to be today. It got postponed because their first opponent jettisoned from the bubble. Jake Nowinski was on our morning show today with Sulkowski and Cebulski on the starting lineup. And they asked him a very pointed question. Look, the tournament is up and running now, and people are optimistic. But at some point here, the tournament's going to come to an end, and everybody's going to go back to their home cities, and then there's supposed to be this schedule that unfolds after that. And they asked Jake Nowinski, how confident are you? Do you believe there's going to be a season after this tournament ends?
If I was asked that question maybe a few weeks ago before the spike in cases in the U.S., I would say yes. But right now, I just don't know if, you know, how everyone is handling it down, you know, in the States. I don't know if it's going to get any better. But if it stays like this right now, no, I don't see how we can possibly be playing games.
Do you feel safe?
You know what? I do. I actually do feel safe. I struggled with that too, you know, coming in, because, you know, you hear stories from other teams, but just speaking from my experience and our team's experience so far, our first few days have been, you know, not that bad. We've thankfully had no positive cases. you know, through two rounds of testing, and we're, you know, we're sticking to ourselves. We kind of created our own little bubble within a bubble. So I think, yeah, I do feel safe.
I feel some apprehension there, and I hope that taking Jake Nowitzki at face value that he does feel safe. I hope his teammates feel safe. I hope everybody down there feels safe. But it would be really difficult to feel 100% good about that situation when two teams have already had to leave. And I'm not trying to be an alarmist. And I've already had a text here within the course of the show saying, hey, look at the recovery rate worldwide and listen to what the World Health Organization is saying. And a lot of people are going to get this, but they're not going to get the symptoms. It's not going to hit them very hard. They'll be fine. It's not about that. It really isn't. And I think that is a misunderstanding. The misconception is that those who have spoken seriously about COVID-19 and the spread believe that everybody who gets it is going to die. No. Nobody in their right mind believes that. What people have been saying this entire time is that we need to spread out the spread, if you will. We need that to occur over a lengthy amount of time so that you do not completely tax your medical system. If this pandemic spreads too quickly, then all of a sudden, your hospitalization rate goes up, your ICU rate goes up, and all of a sudden you run out of places to treat people. And that's when you get into a really precarious situation. That's what people have been saying. And that's why it's, okay, if people develop COVID-19 in these bubbles, we're going to try isolation. And it's not because we think that every person who gets this is going to be on the verge of death. It's not that at all. It's that you can't have mass outbreak, and these bubbles are no different. And look, and if you do, you're going to have to shut down your sport if it gets too bad. And the one thing the MLS has is that these are regular season matches, and this is a tournament. So having to pull two teams out, while it kind of sucks for those two franchises, and it kind of sucks for organizers getting everybody back because it's MLS is back, except for a couple of teams, it doesn't really affect the playoffs or the integrity of a championship. Maybe it leads to your season being shut down, but that's a little bit different than, okay, we are midstream in the middle of the NBA playoffs or NHL playoffs, and there's an outbreak on a team, and we've had to pull that team from the tournament. Well, what do you do now? Do you shut the whole tournament down? Do you say, them's the breaks. I guess the team you were playing gets a bye into the next round. How much does that threaten the integrity of your sport is really what it comes down to. And when championships are online, people care a little bit more. Not from a health and safety standpoint, but from a historical standpoint. So that's the one thing that the NHL and NBA have to be wary of. And they do have a little bit more time here on their side. And so they will be taking their cues from what happens in Major League Baseball and what happens in MLS. And that's why these stories are so applicable to the sports that you follow more. You might not be a big soccer fan, or you might not care that much about MLS's back, but this is all applicable information as to what is going to play out here, hopefully, over the course of the next couple of months. As we saw yesterday, October 2nd, the last day, in theory, that the Stanley Cup could be awarded this year. Draft to follow shortly after that. A lot of intrigue about phase two of the lottery. August 10th, I believe, is the date. Will the Canucks be in that? Will they be moving on to the actual Stanley Cup playoffs? We'll wait and see, but we're counting down the days. Training camp opens on Monday. All of the latest information on the Canucks, on the National Hockey League, you'll find it here on your home of Canucks Hockey, Sportsnet 650. The guys will dive into it next on Canucks Central / Social Distance Central. It's Bick Nizar. It's Brendan Batser right here. Thank you very much, Jamie Dodd. Thank you, Greg Ballack. Excellent work, as always, today, fellas. We're back for one final show of the week. Another day of giveaways from Upper Deck goes on Friday. You can catch us at 9 a.m. tomorrow on your home of Canucks Hockey, Sportsnet 650.